This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK7. And by TrekFan, it's not just a fan club, it's an adventure. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Don't miss out. Help us move toward that Star Trek future by visiting TrekFan.org. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit Trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 104, The Cranial Screwtop Method. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the Smithsonian Channel's real story of Star Trek, an expanded soundtrack release for Insurrection, some unique Into Darkness promotions from Japan, including a track featuring Kyari Pamu Pamu, and news about the next Star Trek film. Then in the feature, we're joined by Drew Stewart and Jenny Zell to explore the legendary TOS episode, Spock's Brain. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. How are you doing this week?
Well, Chris, actually, to tell you the truth, my brain cells are a little bit zapped because I have been outside all weekend for the majority of this week, actually. Sanding and power washing, and then now we're staining our deck. And we've been doing this in high heat and high humidity, and it just... Man. I don't know, man. I feel a little lightheaded.
Now, what qualifies as high heat for you there in North Dakota?
Actually, it's not what you think. It's not like it's 40 degrees or anything like that. We actually get very hot summers here. So it's very high 80s, low 90s with very high humidity. Because it's been threatening to rain for, at least the last couple of days here. And yet it has not rained. So go figure. That's just kind of the way it is.
Just hang on, the well probe will arrive soon and the rain will start.
Gosh, I hope so. I hope so. We're hoping. We could use a day off. But in the meantime, we are staining away, restaining our deck, and getting that done. Because when we bought our house last year, we knew this was something that we would have to do. When we got the house appraised, they said, hey, look, you've probably got one more winter left in this baby. And then after that, you're on your own. So lo and behold, we're getting it done. It's a lot of work, and the deck suddenly seems a lot bigger than it used to be.
My wife would be very proud of you guys because she is reminding me daily that I need to do the same thing to ours.
Ooh, but, daily, huh? Ouch.
Yeah, it really needs to happen.
Well, as we were talking on Twitter, if you provide the vodka and the flight ticket and maybe a little bit of more compensation, I might go over and do your deck.
Okay, I'll work on that because someone really needs to take care of it. Well, I feel you on the heat, Char. It has been really hot and really humid here as well. Nothing like back in Alabama where I grew up, but it's hot enough for me. I think I need to go to a glaciated planet. That's what I need. I need to do like Kirk. I need to go find Spock's brain on a glaciated planet where the temperature is
where it
very
reaches
pleasant.
Nothing more than 40 degrees, even in the tropical zone.
Sounds great to me. Well, why don't we jump into news, Char, today?
Let's do that.
The first item that we have up is news that the Smithsonian Channel, which is a channel that I didn't know existed living here in Japan, but apparently it's a thing.
I didn't either.
The Smithsonian Channel, they started a series called The Real Story, and apparently this is the fifth season of this series, and they've done a show called The Real Story of Star Trek, and this show is available for free, which kind of surprised me, but it's available on YouTube for free, also in the iTunes store for free. And it is a 47-minute look at the real story of Star Trek. Yeah, 47 minutes. What if they either had to cut or pad some footage to make sure that they nailed that number?
That had to have been on purpose, right?
It must have been. I hope so.
Must
be some real Trekkies working there at the Smithsonian Channel. But this is, I did download this from the, well, first I went to YouTube, and of course I can't watch it because I'm not in North America and I'm blocked.
Aww.
Luckily, I do have a US iTunes store account and it's free. So I went there and I downloaded it. I'm planning to watch it myself maybe later today, but you went ahead and watched it, I believe, last night. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I watched it this morning and, you know, to be quite honest, it didn't tell me tons of things that I didn't already know. Like, if you've watched Trek Nation with Rod Roddenberry, I would say that that gives you a much more in-depth glimpse of who Gene Roddenberry was and a little bit on the history of Star Trek, which this episode from the Smithsonian Channel, it basically does the same thing. It's just much more condensed. But you know what? I still enjoyed it.
Well, let me ask you, they say that from the description that the show is look at the scientific advances and inventions inspired by Star Trek.
That's true.
Did it have more of that spin on it as opposed to who Gene Roddenberry was, which is, as you say, more what Trek Nation is about?
That's true. Yes, absolutely. I mean, they do go a little bit into who Gene Roddenberry was and how he is a real person with failings and good things and yada, yada, yada. But no, they actually do take a very in-depth glimpse into the technology that we see on Star Trek that is now becoming real, in some sense, in our modern world. I mean, we all know that cell phones are basically now the more powerful counterpart to the communicator. But even more so, we've got things developing now. After watching this episode, I did not realize that we have things that replicate cells and can mimic functions of organs, and how far away are we from a transporter? If you watch this program, you'll know. It's quite interesting.
I saw a graphic yesterday online, and someone had mocked up Star Trek in real life, left and right, in columns, and it said Star Trek, inspiring invention since 1968, something like that. And
oh,
I like
yeah,
the
I
latest
this.
One. The last one on the list was Sisko wearing the Jim Hadar little eyepiece inspiring
with Google
Glass.
Yeah, it's Google Glass. Yeah.
That was perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
This sounds interesting. I'm looking forward to watching it. You know, this is, I'm sure, being on the Smithsonian Channel, more for the general audience, less so for the Trekkie audience, less so for those of us who have watched Trek Nation and all the other specials that come out. So maybe some of that information is going to be new to the target audience.
Yes. But you know what? I did learn a couple of things on here in this program that I did not know. For instance, I did not know that when the original Star Trek premiered in the 60s, I did not know that Gene Roddenberry's father went around his neighborhood, knocked on the doors of all of his neighbors, and apologized for that ridiculous TV show that his son got on TV. This was apparently a real thing. I never knew that. So even somebody who's been a Trekker since the age of 6 learned something from this program.
I wonder what he did when the third season premiered and Spock's brain came on.
I'm pretty sure he'd given up well before that point.
Maybe so.
Another thing that I learned was that Leonard Nimoy kind of channels Bones when he talks about transporter technology, saying he would not want to be the first person to try.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. That's...
Which it was kind of cute and funny.
That's a good point that we should mention, that the show does feature interviews with Leonard Nimoy as well as Rod Roddenberry.
Yes, it does. Yes, they're both in there quite extensively.
So go check it out. It's, like I said, it's available on YouTube. If you're in North America, you can probably watch it. If you're outside North America, probably not. If you're in Germany, I'm pretty sure they won't even let you load the page at all. because they seem to block everything in Germany, I hear from our German listeners. But it's free. But, you know, go to the iTunes store. If you want to download it in HD, you can download it for free. Some episodes of The Real Story are $2.99 a piece on iTunes, but the Star Trek one is free. So you just go there and just click and download it and drop it on your iPhone, your iPad, whatever. Watch it on the bus, watch it on the train.
Yeah.
And
that's
find
all
out what's
I did. I got to watch it on YouTube. Simple as that. One other thing we ought to mention about this is that there's also good interviews with Jo Trimble and her husband dealing with the whole fan club aspect of it, which ties into our feature a little bit because of the whole threat of Star Trek being canceled in the second season. And then, of course, it got brought on for a third. And she was quite instrumental in that. And her perspective is in this episode on the Smithsonian Channel as well.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to checking that out. So, Char, you know that I love music. I love the soundtracks from films. I especially love the soundtracks from Star Trek. And in particular, I love the compositions of Jerry Goldsmith. And GNP Crescendo is continuing their trend of releasing expanded soundtracks from the TNG films. They've already done Generations, they've done First Contact, and on August 6th, they're going to be releasing the expanded soundtrack from Star Trek Insurrection. What's your feeling on Insurrection as a film by itself?
You read my mind here, I think, because when I think of which TNG film I'm just dying to get more of the soundtrack from, it's not Insurrection. However, we've already got Generations, we've already got First Contact, so this is the next best thing. And considering how great the stuff is that we've heard already from the other movies, quite honestly, I'm interested now. I will probably take a good look at this.
Yeah, I'm planning to buy it myself. I mean, it's only $19.98, and it has a 16-page booklet which includes notes from Jeff Bond. And, you know, Jeff did the very extensive notes in the TOS collection that La La Land put out. He's a musicologist. And
yeah,
just that would be very fascinating to me. I have the original Insurrection soundtrack, which was released 15 years ago, and I bought it right after the movie came out, as I usually do. And this one actually has about 30 minutes of additional music that wasn't on that first release. And if you look at the track listing and you look at which tracks are new, there is a bulk of music in the first half. Actually, tracks 5 through 11 are all pieces that were not included on the original soundtrack.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder why and piques my curiosity. Now I want to hear it. Now I want to kind of go back and rewatch Insurrection and see, okay, what's the music here? Where would it have gone? Right here? That sort of a thing. I'm interested. You got me. I'm hooked. This is interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah, not only tracks 5 through 11, but actually tracks 5 through 19, all except for 12, 13, and 15, all of those tracks, and 17, all of those tracks are new. So that's like the bulk of the music from the heart of the film, apparently, is going to be new. Now, one track that's on this one that was also on the original release, which should certainly inspire you to buy it, is track 13, The Riker Maneuver.
Of course. That's a must-have. If you buy this, I mean, you know what I think was missing from this? The extended version of The Riker Maneuver? Because if you buy this soundtrack, you're going to get it for The Riker Maneuver. I was hoping for a remix, an extended version, and another remix by some famous DJ somewhere. Come on!
I would hope so. You need that, like 4 or 5 tracks at the end, all the different remixes.
Yeah, exactly. I know some people aren't into that, but I would be into that for the Riker Maneuver. And really nothing else, but that, definitely.
And then the Riker Maneuver can be a dance move that's going to be the hot new rage.
It's just where you put your leg up on every table you can possibly reach. Yeah.
You move across the floor, you put your leg up on the bar. You move across the floor, you put your leg up on that table.
That's right.
You put your leg up on your partner's shoulder.
It's just starting a new dance craze right there.
I also wanted to come bundled with the one of these remixes for sure, but the video that focuses on the Trill Ensign.
Well, of course. Although this is a music soundtrack, not so much, you know, video stills and visualizations.
But you've been to YouTube. People do this, you know. People make videos.
It's true. People make you've whole music videos of this sort of thing, which I think you should get on, Chris.
Well, you've seen the one people have done for Janeway and Chakotay, where they're having a love affair, and they've
of course
they've taken scenes from many episodes of Voyager.
To make it look like. I would ask you for which one, which video, because there's gazillions of them.
Really? I think YouTube needs to have its own Kathy and Coco channel.
It really should. Sort of like how Vine has the cat channel now.
Exactly.
YouTube needs the Janeway Chakotay, or I'm sorry, Kathy and Coco channel.
They really, really do.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, this is coming from GMP Crescendo. You can pre-order it from their website if you want to pick it up. Check out the liner notes by Jeff Bond, as I mentioned, also Lucas Kendall. And there's so much new music on here. And this has kind of a lighter feel, especially after First Contact. A lighter feel.
Definitely.
To the music. But it's nice music. And, you know, I like Star Trek Insurrection personally. I know it's not the big action movie that First Contact was, but it kind of feels a little bit more TNG than the other TNG films do.
Which is what some people would argue is the problem with it. But, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah. Maybe it would have been better if they had lowered Worf's voice an octave. And yeah.
Sure. And firmed up his boobs. I'm not sure.
Was that a thing? I don't know.
Don't you remember from the movie, Beverly and Deanna? Have you noticed how your boobs have firmed up?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Not that we care about these things in this century.
Yes, yes, I remember that now.
Yeah, right. Of course you don't. Liars.
All right. So, yeah, if you're interested, we'll put a link in the show notes and you can hop over and you can check that out. All right, Char, now I have a surprise story for you for today's news, and
ooh.
I've just uploaded an image to the show page, so why don't you refresh your page and look at the top of that page and click on that JPEG file you see there.
Okay. Oh, it's Captain Janeway! What is this, an iPad cover?
It is an iPad cover. I came across this yesterday on StarTrek.com in the StarTrek.com store. And I don't even remember how I came across it because I wasn't looking for it. But I saw this and, you know, I live in Japan where lots of stuff's pink and 40-year-old women carry around Hello Kitty purses. And
I saw this. I don't get that.
Bright, like bubblegum pink iPad case with a really kind of, it reminds me of like 70s lunchbox art, this image of Captain Janeway.
I would say it's even a step down from that.
Step down from that? I don't know. If you could emboss this and put it on a lunchbox, I mean, that might be pretty cool, Sharp.
Well, if it were embossed, yeah, okay, then you're talking.
Then you're talking. You know, we get a lot of iPhone cases that are Star Trek themed. But we don't get many iPad cases. And so I know that you don't have an iPad yet, Char, but I'm sure you're going to get one at some point. And I wanted to ask you, is this the ideal case for you?
You know, even though it has Captain Janeway on it, and I appreciate that, I am not the pink bubblegum type, unfortunately. I don't quite honestly understand the whole thing about carrying around Hello Kitty, and I'm only 31. So I don't quite understand how in Japan it's a trendy thing when you're 40 to do that. It's just not me. It's just not my culture. I don't get it. It's not something I'm going to do. Because I guess the thing is if I want Janeway on my iPad cover, I want her to be a total badass. Especially because I've been watching Orange is the New Black, which is a new series on Netflix. It debuted on Thursday, right? And I binged watched that as fast as I possibly could in between doing, you know, stupid real life things like work and sleeping and eating and staining my deck. but I watched that whole thing and finished it up this weekend. And let me tell you, Kate Mulgrew plays this very, very Russian and very stern's not the quite word. I mean, she just didn't take shit from anybody. And she runs the kitchen and she is amazing. And so when I'm thinking Janeway, especially right now with that context in mind, I want her to be guns a-blazing and kicking some butt.
So in that kitchen, Neelix is not going to last long as a chef, I guess.
He's going to be in the food. Let's put it that way. Yeah, because Red does not take anything.
So one reason I wanted to show you this was for that, to get your input on what would be the right kind of iPad case for you. So let's just create iPad cases for a moment. Now, you've talked about Janeway here.
Okay.
If you were going to create iPad cases, I mean, you're a designer like me, you're going to create iPad cases.
Mm-hmm.
What would be ideal for you? What would you want to bring to the world?
Okay, if I were going for a Janeway iPad case, I would totally go macrocosm on you. I would have Janeway with the gleaming biceps and the gun in her
big
hand.
Big biceps, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a tank top and glistening in sweat. I mean, that just says badass to me. And then if you put that with some really pretty space-ish galaxy background, I'm sold. And guess what? I've got a birthday coming up, so even though I don't have an iPad, I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
What else would you come up with? I mean, some other characters.
I suppose the next thing that comes to my mind is a really badass Khan. Original Khan. No offense to Benedict Cumberbatch, but he didn't quite have the pecs. I would want real Ricardo Montalban pecs decorating my iPad case.
So do you want the case itself to be molded like Khan's pecs?
Yes, I want his pecs embossed to spec so that they stick out just in proportion to the actual pec.
It would be really cool, and that could cushion your iPad if you drop it.
Absolutely, right? Because they're thick enough. Definitely.
Exactly.
So, okay, now that I've told you some of my ideas, what have you got? Because I don't think Leffler's going to protect you from that fall, buddy. Just saying.
How did you know I was going to make an iPad case that was just pictures of Vincent Leffler all over it?
You're getting predictable.
With matching
like
wallpaper to go on the other side.
Uh-huh. Come up with something else.
I don't know. You know, I think, of course, the Wesley Technicolor iPad case would be quite popular.
You nerd.
I think, you know, for Enterprise, what would be cool is instead of having like Khan's chest molded sticking out, this one would be kind of concave, and you could flip it over, and it would double as a water dish for your dog. It's Enterprise themed.
Oh.
It's got a little picture of Porthos on it.
Oh, now that's cute. Yeah, and I like the practical application of that. Doubling as a water
dish.
And
the fact that you're putting water on the backside of your iPad, I mean, don't mind that. No, don't worry.
It's not a big deal. It's waterproof. No big deal.
It definitely is.
It's fine.
Now, of course, Star Trek characters on cases are wonderful. Definitely. Definitely. But if you really want to make money, you know, you have to expand beyond just Star Trek. So
you do.
I think what we need, Shards, we need somewhere to go after that.
Well, I think the first stop for us, of course, is Bosom Buddies.
Of course, absolutely. And that's going to be perfect. It's the perfect companion to our Khan case on the Star Trek side.
It really is. You've got Khan with his pecs on one, and then you've got Henry.
You've got Kip and Henry.
Yeah, on the other. I think we're covering every realm of TV here. And I think you don't just stop at Bosom Buddies, you know? You appeal to all audiences. You go for the Cosbys. You go for Weekend at Bernie's. You could even go into movie franchises like that. I mean, oh gosh, I mean, what, gosh, what else? We do so many things.
What about the Sharknado case, where would you spin your iPad around, sharks fly out of it?
I knew you were going to go for that, and sadly that works.
It really does.
So, yes, by all means, let's do that.
So if anyone's interested in this case, we'll put a link in the show notes over to the StarTrek.com store. If you want to go check it out, if you want to buy it, they've got other cases over there. But it really caught my eye. It was very interesting. So, and it looked like something I might find here in Japan, I have to admit. If only Star Trek were popular here.
And it sparked an interesting conversation.
Now, Shar, speaking of Japan, I was watching TV during dinner the other night, and it was just a quiz show that we were watching, and then a commercial came on, and it was a tie-in for Star Trek Into Darkness, and I knew that they're starting finally to promote Star Trek Into Darkness in Japan a little bit. We've been finding in train stations like life-size Captain Kirk stand-ups that are promoting the movie.
Oh, nice.
A few little things have been coming around. It's just starting to pick up. Well, this commercial...
Marielle would love that.
Well, he's not in his underwear. It's just he's in his full gold.
I don't think it matters. I think she'd still love it.
All right. Well, I'll have to get a picture for Marielle.
She'd love that.
Well, this was a commercial for a Japanese industrial household lubricant called Kure 556, which is basically, for most everyone listening, will be familiar with WD-40. So
yes,
it's something that
exactly.
You spray. You got a squeaky chair, you know, your door hinges aren't working quite right, you know, bicycle chain is sticking, whatever. Spray some WD-40 on it. I don't know about you, Shar, but when I was growing up, WD-40 was pretty much the solution to every problem in the house.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if duct tape doesn't fix it, you've got WD-40.
Right. That's right. It's duct tape, WD-40. If you hurt yourself, it's camphophonique. It's pretty much, if you've got these three things in the house, you're pretty much set. You can handle any situation. Well,
you can fix anything.
This Kure 556 is basically the Japanese equivalent of WD-40. And so this commercial opens with clips from Star Trek Into Darkness where the Enterprise is underwater and they're in their scuba suits. And you've watched the commercial now, right, Shar?
Yes, I have.
So what happens next?
Well, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, if you put the Enterprise underwater, eventually things are going to rust and they're going to get a little bit squeaky. And so you've got to fix that.
So this little short Japanese Vulcan guy wearing a red scuba suit comes in with his
helmet.
Which
I love, by the way. His ears pop up. It's funny.
Right. And he's kind of crouched over, and it's very Japanese. He's very kind of apologetic in his demeanor.
Yes, yes.
And he comes in, and they mix scenes of him on the bridge together with clips from the movie, and you see the Enterprise coming up out of the Nibiren Ocean, and they're concerned about what's going on in the ship, and they're under the ocean and the salt water, and so he walks over to the chair. And he sprays the chair, the captain's chair, with Kure 556. And then he looks at Kirk and he's like, Hai dozo, sit down. You know, the chair is ready for you now. And Kirk sits down. And, the chair, it's working. Squeaks are gone.
Nice. You made that sound go away.
Yeah. So what do you think, Shar? Good tie-in? Good product tie-in? What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Why not? It's definitely different from the kind of commercials that we see here in the States. But it definitely sounds like it would work really well in Japan. Based on what I've seen of Japanese commercials, this fits right in line. I'm sure people love it.
Surprisingly, no one was dancing in the commercial because that's typically what happens in Japan. Our commercials are really, really different from American commercials.
And yes, they are.
When in doubt... When you don't have an idea for a commercial, what you do is you just get people to dance, sing and dance. So luckily that didn't happen in this commercial.
Everybody loves that. I think it works. I mean, what's not to love about singing and dancing and feeling good? We ought to take that approach here.
So this commercial is, it's really interesting. And we have it on our website. We'll put a link in the show notes and you can go watch it. Now, it's not just a simple product tie-in for the sake of the commercial. Cura is actually running a campaign. And the campaign started on June 30th, and it's going to run all the way until September 30th. Now, again, as anyone who listens to this show knows, the release date of Star Trek Into Darkness in Japan is August 23rd. So what they're doing is anyone who enters between June 30th and August 15th has a chance to win one of, well, two of, actually, because they're doing them in pairs. They're giving away 556 tickets to Star Trek Into Darkness. Again, the product is Kura 5-56. Then from August 16th to September 30th, you'll have a chance to win a mobile battery for your iPhone, your iPad, your tablet, your smartphone. I don't know if you have one of these, Char, but I have one. It's just a battery that you plug into the wall, you charge it up, and then when you're out and about, you can plug your device into it and you can recharge.
Oh, nice. No, I'm afraid I do not.
So I have one myself. I can recharge my iPhone 3 times on one charge of this battery because if I go into the city and I'm, especially if I'm using maps, you know, I'm walking around, I've got the GPS going. And of course I'm tweeting a lot and I'm taking shots on Instagram. My battery drains really quickly.
That's what drains my battery.
Playing Star Trek. Oh my goodness. Star Trek Rivals does drain battery very quickly.
It does.
Especially if you have 40 games going at once.
Like I'm sure we both do.
I do, yeah. And I've got 40 games going, and I've got like 15 people waiting for a game with me to start. People keep adding me, and I can't start the games because I'm at the limit. So, but they're giving away, they're Panasonic batteries, and 5 people will win the large battery, which has a huge capacity. It's double my battery, which means you could recharge your iPhone 6 times.
Wow.
With this thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 56 other people. Here we've got the 556 going again. 56 other people will win a battery that's the same size as the one I have. I call it Keenzer-sized compared to the grand prize there.
Cute.
So it's kind of a cool tie-in that they're doing. And
yeah,
it helps generate some interest for Star Trek because really, in this country, there's almost no interest in Star Trek. So Paramount has to do something to get people more interested in going to see this movie. And so they really do have to present it more as an action movie here, even more so than in the States.
That's interesting.
Char, I did want to ask you, what other kind of product tie-ins could you imagine? If you were going to do this, you know, they come to you, it's your ad agency, and they want you to do commercials to help promote the movie. Based on having seen the movie, what kind of product tie-ins would you come up with?
Well, I think you'd have that perfect mix of action scenes and special effects mixed with a very common product that everybody knows as a household name.
Maybe like Van Camp baked beans because Keenzer, he can eat just one bean and he's done.
Right, absolutely. Or you would tie in something that everybody knows, like a Budweiser classic.
So like the engine rooms and Budweiser together?
Right, because of course the engine room looks like a brewery. And Uhura orders the Budweiser classics. I mean, you've got several tie-ins there.
Okay, well that's pretty obvious one, yeah. So this was an interesting commercial that came on. And I'll be keeping my eyes open for more Japanese promotions, whether they be TV commercials or what or whatever they are, and share those with everyone. Now, there is one other thing that Paramount Japan is doing to promote Star Trek Into Darkness here. This one I found really interesting. According to the information from Paramount, this music track was co-produced by J.J. Abrams and Yasutaka Nakata. And, of course, I doubt that you know who Yasutaka Nakata is, Char, but
no.
He's very well-known electro-pop composer here in Japan. He formed a group called Capsule, which is known for their... It's him and one other vocalist, Toshiko Koshijima, and it's electronic techno-pop type music. And Char, as you know, I have a little perfume problem.
Just a little.
As in, the group, it's my favorite Japanese group, is a group called Perfume. And Nakata, he is the producer, composer, and lyricist of Perfume. So I'm very familiar with his work. And he has teamed up to produce this track. And the guest vocalist is Kyari Pamupamu. Now, I don't know if you've heard of her or not.
Not until I looked at this clip, to be quite honest.
Not until this. Well, we were watching BBC News the other day, and they did a whole story about Kyari Pamupamu. And she's become very, very popular here now. And she's also being produced by Yasutaka Nakata. And he's also the lyricist for her as well. And you see the image of her, which I've put here on the show page for you. Mm-hmm. Very cutesy, kind of Shibuya girl, Japanese cutesy look, right?
Yeah, very porcelain and doll-ish, very delicate.
Right, yeah. And her music is a little more kind of the cutesy, younger sound compared to Perfume. But on the same token, she's kind of like Lady Gaga in a way. She's in terms of like the growth of popularity and this kind of like very unusual. She changes her image a lot. She's this weird, a lot of weird stuff going on. But because she's so popular here, Paramount has brought her in to help promote Into Darkness here. And I thought that you and, you know, people listening might find this interesting to see how the film is being promoted in a market like Japan, as opposed to how it's promoted in, say, the States, where Star Trek is such a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that I do find interesting is that we have access, thanks to the wonderful internet, to YouTube videos where we can see commercials for advertisements in Japan for Into Darkness. And the angle they take is just a little bit different.
Now, you watched the music video for this track, right?
I did. Yes. And basically, for those who've not seen it yet, and I recommend you do check it out because it is interesting. It's a nice little mashup of a remix, essentially, of The Growl, which is that track that plays when Scotty is in the bar. And it's a rework of that with clips of the movie. And it's basically a music video. But then it's also got clips of this lady singing as well.
And clips of the movie, specifically clips of people jumping off of things, right? So the centerpiece of the video is the space jump, you know, the crazy, ridiculous space jump between the Enterprise and the Vengeance. And that's kind of the centerpiece of the video.
Yes. In fact, there's added special effects, are there not, where you kind of see the navigation coming through, you know, and it reminds me a lot of Star Fox, and I'm just thinking to myself as I'm watching this, do a barrel roll!
Do a barrel roll! The barrel roll, press E or R,
They really, really should.
Because it looks a lot like Star Fox.
Yeah. Well, this is part, again, because Nakata is doing this, and because he produces Perfume, these effects you're talking about are, they're similar to the things that they've been using in Perfume's Love the World Tour. On the stage, they have kind of this kind of light show thing going on as part of the tour. So it's going to be inspired by that. And so that's the centerpiece. And then, of course, all the other times that people jump off of things, you know, Kirk and Bones running and jumping into the ocean on Nibiru, you know, Khan jumping off of the building. It's people jumping out of things. It's all spun up in here. So it's kind of fun. I will say, though, it's interesting that I think they're capitalizing on Kyari Pamupamu's name to promote it. However, if you knew who she was and you played this track, you wouldn't know it was her. Vocally, it's not really Pamupamu, but it's there. So it's going to get all the publicity. It's going to get all the attention, but it's a much more subdued vocal than what you would be expecting.
Right. As somebody who doesn't know who she is, it just sounds very generic Japanese to me.
Right.
As the track does it just in general. I mean, The Growl is just a very good general poppy party music anthem, basically. So they kind of replicated that for Japan.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's good. I mean, it's when I first saw it, I thought, this is kind of weird. You know, this really doesn't have that much to do with the movie. But, you know, knowing the market here as I do, I think that it's a smart move by Paramount to do things like this, because the last Star Trek movie, the JJ 2009 movie, only made about $5.8 million in Japan. That's it.
Oh, wow. That's not much. Not for a movie these days.
That's not much. So they really have to get people interested in it somehow. And I think doing something like this is great. And it's, I think it's targeting the right kind of audience as well. You know, the tone of the video fits the audience that they need to go after, I think, to get at least the first group of people interested in the film, get them into the theaters, and then they can spread the word.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very young and hip and intense, very action oriented. Yeah. You're going to get the younger crowd in and you're going to make money that way.
Yeah. So pretty good stuff there. So we'll put a link in the show notes if you want to go check that out. I know you can watch the music video anyway on YouTube. I downloaded the music track from iTunes Japan. I don't know if it's available in the US store or not, though. So I have to check
on
that.
I'm not sure. I'll have to check.
So, Shar, a couple more quick points here while we're talking about Star Trek Into Darkness. I speculated last week that the release date of the Blu-ray was going to be September 10th, because that did seem to be the case based on the release of the Star Trek Origins Blu-ray, even though Amazon was still not really putting a date on yet. It is confirmed now, September 10th is the release date for Star Trek Into Darkness on Blu-ray. Interestingly, fans can access the digital version 3 weeks earlier on August 20th. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that means, like, for me, I've already pre-ordered Star Trek Into Darkness, and I got the whole 3D Blu-ray digital combo set. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if Amazon is going to send a code for digital access.
That would be my guess. And I pre-ordered as well.
Yeah, because if they do, you know, I do have access to the iTunes store in the U.S., even though I don't have money in there. But if I don't have to purchase something, if I just put in a code, it will mean that I'll be able to watch Star Trek Into Darkness through U.S. iTunes 3 days before it opens in the theater here.
Great marketing, Japan.
Great job, right?
Yeah, fail.
But the movie has already grossed $445 million worldwide. Hopefully Japan will be able to push it to, you know, 450 with our 5 million. Hopefully we'll be able to bring in maybe, I don't know, 20 million this time. I think that would be huge if we could do that here. But it's the top grossing Star Trek film ever. And
yeah, already, right?
Already, yeah. And so the Blu-ray, we do know what some of the features are going to be now. This is something else we didn't know last week. Shar, what are some of the features that we're going to get?
Well, a couple of the ones that I'm very interested in checking out are Creating the Red Planet, which is all about the opening sequence on that alien home world with the primitive people. That's extremely colorful and very visually appealing. And so that's something I'm interested in. And another one that I think a lot of people just as a general audience are going to appreciate is the Klingon homeworld. It's essentially a featurette about Kronos and the new look pierced Klingons, the predecessors to Chang, as a lot of people say.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly. I'm looking forward to this one as well, because I felt like I didn't get to see the Klingons in the film enough. I was expecting to see more Klingons in the film, especially because I played Star Trek Rivals for a long time before I got to see the movie. Mm-hmm. And so there are all these different Klingons in Star Trek Rivals, and they have names and everything. And so I thought I was going to be able to see more of it, but
right. And we don't know who these guys are. We didn't get to know them. Right. Yeah. But I mean, there's tons of other features here. So if that's not something you're interested in, there's so much more. There's stuff about the Spock and Khan throwdown at the very end and about creating that fight scene. I mean, that is a very intense part of the movie. I mean, that even rivals an Andorian fight scene, if you ask me.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
It really does. But Uhura should have beamed down with her ice cleaver instead of a
phaser. Really should have, right? I mean, what a missed opportunity, but hindsight being what it is.
So is this featurette going to be a picture of the writers in the writer's room watching Revenge of the Sith on Blu-ray so that they can choreograph the fight scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan? Is that what we're going to be seeing here? Because it just doesn't sound very interesting, if so.
Yeah, actually, no, it's probably going to be a little more of an interview type of piece with Zachary Quinto and Benedict Cumberbatch about basically kicking each other's asses.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, that's okay, too. I'm down for that. I'll watch that. Yeah. Definitely. Especially as they argue about who was winning at what point.
Well, that would be interesting to see. And then she beamed down.
Right. I mean, before Uhura beamed down and started stunning Khan, it was really 50-50. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
So there's going to be that, and then there's going to be The Enemy of My Enemy, which examines the how and why of choosing Khan as the villain and the decision to keep his identity under wraps. Now, I'm pretty sure that the decision to keep his identity under wraps was based simply on the fact that if we didn't, Star Trek fans would have revolted before the film hit the theaters, and we would not have made $445 million because everyone would have been really pissed.
But then, I don't know about that, Chris, because honestly, I went into the movie pretty much knowing it was Khan. Didn't you?
Well, I knew it was Khan, yeah, for a very long time. But I'm very open-minded. You know, I said from the beginning, I don't care if it's Khan, if they do a different story with him. That's fine. It's an alternate timeline.
Right.
I think there are a lot of Star Trek fans who, if they had known it was Khan before going in, they would have boycotted and refused to go see the movie.
Yeah.
I sincerely believe
this is
true.
You're probably right. Yeah. As much as I don't want to admit that, I mean, I thought, honestly, I kind of have the opposite perspective where I thought the whole thing of keeping Khan under wraps was kind of a cop-out because they didn't do that really that good of a job of it. But you make a good point.
It was a lame thing to do in that we all, when they started trying to cast Khan originally and they had Benicio del Toro, everyone at that point, like, okay, it's Khan. And they're like, right? No, it's not Khan.
Come on, that was obvious.
And then I thought, okay, maybe it's not Khan, you know, maybe it's somebody else. But then when they started with the whole, the villain is John Harrison, like, okay, you didn't name your villain John Harrison. You already said he's a canon character in an interview. You told us it's a character we know. Well, there's no one named John Harrison.
Yeah.
There's someone named Erickson, which was the original name of Khan. Yeah.
Right. And maybe they should have gone for that and been a little bit more clever about it. But if you're going to go for John Harrison, you might as well go for John Smith.
Yeah, right. Well, they actually said in an interview that they thought about going with Erickson, and they actually shot the movie with the name of Erickson instead of Harrison. And then they decided, no, well, that's going to give it away. So they changed it to Harrison.
Those of us in the know would have appreciated that. And those who weren't any wiser, well, to heck with them.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So
anyway, this stuff is coming. One other thing quickly here, Char. Because the movie has made $445 million already globally, it seems that the studio may be excited to move forward more quickly with the next movie instead of making us wait 4 years as they did this last time. And this came out in an interview that Quinto did at the Galway Film Festival in Ireland on July 12th. Now, he revealed some interesting information.
He did, and this is very exciting because essentially he said that they're going to start shooting the next Trek film next year.
Yeah. He says Paramount has told the cast that they will be shooting the next Star Trek film in 2014. And interestingly, he also said that JJ still wants to direct.
Right. So I guess if they push ahead production on the next Star Trek film, that makes room for him to direct Star Wars in 2015, correct?
Well, it could be. That's a good point. Yeah, if they did push the schedule, it would make fans happy, Star Trek fans happy, and it could allow JJ to direct. Because if there's going to be an overlap there, he's definitely going to be doing Star Wars. So, we'll see. 2014 seems like a really quick turnaround, though.
Absolutely. It seems even quicker than what they need to be doing to make the 50th anniversary for Star Trek.
Yeah. It would, because that would be 2016, would be the 50th, right?
So, and they were initially talking about releasing the film in time for that. So they're really on an accelerated timetable now. And I'm guessing it's because of JJ's schedule.
It could be. That would make a lot of sense. Now, here's another little thing that just popped in my head. What if they're accelerating it to capitalize on the popularity of the current film, to keep the momentum going, to get this movie out 1 year before the 50th anniversary, so that during the 50th anniversary year, Star Trek could return to television?
Hey, you never know. That would be awesome.
I think that would make a lot of fans happy.
Absolutely.
Well, Shar, that's all we have for news this week. But before we jump into what I'm sure is going to be a crazy feature today from Spock's Brain.
Undoubtedly.
Let's tell all of our listeners about our sponsor for this week's show, Squarespace. Squarespace is my favorite way to build a website. I build all my websites on Squarespace. It's an all-in-one hosting and CMS platform that makes it fast and easy for you to build a personal blog, a website, whether large or small, an online store. You can do just anything you want to do with Squarespace. And they have this new branding campaign going right now called Create Your Own Space. And they have this really cool 1 minute video that shows how many of their users are using the Squarespace platform in the real world to do really amazing things. Now, Shar, last week I asked Daniel what he would do with Squarespace to create his own space. And I know you have your personal blog on Squarespace already, but if you were going to create another space beyond your personal blog, thinking of all the things that you can do with this amazing platform, what would you do with Squarespace?
Well, you know what I would do, Chris? After all the talking that we've done today, I would open up a store and I would sell iPad cases of Macrocosm Janeway. I would definitely start with that and then expand to other markets, as we already talked about, going to Bosom Buddies and then just spanning, frankly, all of TV and maybe make myself a millionaire. Who knows?
You really could. And I had a feeling that's what you were going to say. And you could easily do it with Squarespace. You know, one of the spaces they suggest is create your own store. And I've had to set up stores for clients in the past, and it used to be a really big headache. But the great thing about Squarespace is they've hooked up with Stripe, and Stripe is this really great system for processing orders, processing credit cards, you know, handling your shipping, really running your online store. And because it's integrated with Squarespace, you don't have to deal with any of that setup yourself. You just drag your item blocks down onto your page using Layout Engine, and it's really easy and it's ready to go. And Squarespace doesn't take any cut of your sales themselves. You pay a small fee to Stripe for your credit card processing, just as you would with any online store system. So, you know, you could have your iPad case business running in just one day. Geez, if you got your designs ready to go, Shar.
Absolutely. It would take seconds to upload that, make it look good, and put it live.
You know, other things that you can do on Squarespace, you can create your own idea, create your own business, create your own image, create your own canvas. If you're an artist, it's a great place to display your artwork. They have fantastic tools for displaying images, kind of built-in slideshows, built-in. It's really fantastic, professionally designed templates that you can use as a starting point for displaying artwork, you know, with full bleed images. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful and very, very simple. You can create your own anthem. They have great audio file integration if you want to share your musical compositions on your website. And of course, as we already talked about, a store, a personal blog, just create your own space, anything you want to do. You're absolutely going to love it. Layout Engine makes it really, really easy for you to create a site without any coding knowledge. You just drag the blocks onto the page. You can arrange them. It's very flexible. And responsive design makes sure that your site looks great in any desktop browser on any mobile device, no matter the screen size or the orientation. It's all very, very simple. Now, Shar, one of the best things about Squarespace is that it's really, really inexpensive. So if our listeners want to go try this out for themselves, how much is it going to cost?
It can cost as little as $8 a month for the standard package. And that's pretty much, I mean, that's what I use for my personal site. That is probably what a lot of us need. So for $8 a month, and then if you apply our Trek code, which for this month is Trek7, you're saving 10% off of that. You're getting a really good deal. But if you want to go for unlimited, which is the most popular, you can pay $16 a month for all of that. And that is unlimited bandwidth, unlimited space, no worries about any limits whatsoever. And then, of course, if you want to open up your own store, that's $24 a month for your business. And that's still a really good value.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't have to pay a third party for, you know, credit card processing and all those other services that you would have to do a store. So
right.
$24, real steal, real bargain for setting up a store. So those are fantastic prices. And Squarespace takes care of the hosting, the SEO, and they have the most amazing support that you'll find anywhere. So, you know, go try it out for yourself. You can try it free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. Just put in your name and your email address. They'll set up a temp site for you automatically. Using that, you have access to all the features of Squarespace for 14 days. You can import your existing site from WordPress or other platforms to see how it's going to look. You can play with the tools to tweak it, see how easy it is to do amazing things and present your content and your ideas to the world with Squarespace. And then when you sign up, and I know you're going to want to, you can save, as Char mentioned, 10% on your lifetime purchase on all new accounts by using our offer code TREK7. It's a special offer Squarespace has for Trek FM listeners. So go try it. And if you sign up for the annual plan, you can also receive a free custom domain registration. So you can get janeway'sawesomeipads.com or whatever that's going to be there, Char, for free and get that all hooked in. You'll be set and ready to go.
Awesome.
So please go support Squarespace. That helps us bring this programming to you every week.
Stop.
On September 20th, 1968, after successfully rescuing Star Trek from cancellation, fans were greeted with the premiere of a third season. And when you've been given a second chance, you want to put your best foot forward. So rather than going with the first new episode filmed, the producers reached deeper into the bag to pull out the season premiere. And the story they chose was Spock's brain. Today we're going to talk about this legendary episode, and to help us do that, we have with us our TOS editor, Drew Stewart. Hello, Landrew.
Joy to you, friends.
Now, Landrew, this episode is kind of the opposite of your usual philosophy. You know, here, Spock isn't of the body, he's out of the body.
It's true, but he's become one with a body of facilities that he keeps running, so it's kind of more Landrew's philosophy than anything.
So he is kind of like a Landrew.
He is the body.
Wow.
He is.
Blew your mind.
That's deep, Drew.
That is.
That's about as deep as we're going to get in today.
That's it. It all goes downhill from here.
Exactly.
Also joining us, and we're really glad to have her with us today, friend of the show, someone you know from Mouthy Broadcast, and many of you may also know from Dork Trek, it's our friend Jenny Zell. Hello, Jenny. How are you?
Good. How are you? Glad to be back.
Jenny!
I noticed on the screen today it says that you are Jenny Pleasure and Pain Zell, and I have to say, that's a peculiar combination.
Yeah, I was very inspired by this episode, I have to say.
I'm sure you were. I was going to say, it doesn't sound out of the ordinary from what I know of you, but so be it.
No, it's not. I'm going to go ahead and build one of those, pain belts right after the show, and I'm going to attach it to Ben and
awesome.
Push the same button whether or not you want to knock out particular people in a room, or a whole ship, or if you want to wake somebody up, or...
Exactly.
Same button, same sound effect.
If you want to wake someone up, you have to press green twice. True, not once, but twice.
None of the items are labeled in this episode, and it upsets me. I've got a thing that does 100 things, and I only have 3 colored buttons. McCoy's remote control is like that.
Your iPhone only has 1 button, right?
That's what I was going to say. Imagine if Apple had invented the bracelet for the pain belts.
It's not how many buttons you have, it's how you use them.
Exactly.
I see now. I was thinking of it fourth dimensionally.
Everybody knows that there's 5 dimensions.
And the fifth one is pain.
It's gotta be. The fourth is pleasure, the fifth is pain.
Okay, so as I said in the introduction, you want to get your best material to kick off the season. Every time I see that this is the season premiere for season 3, I'm just thinking, what was going on? But then I think about, what did they have to choose from? I mean, let's look at the first 6 episodes shot. Spectre of the Gun, yeah. And the Children Shall Leave.
The winner!
The Paradise Syndrome.
Yeah.
What are you going to choose? Now, the fourth episode was the Enterprise incident, which I think would have been a great thing to lead off the season.
Yeah.
And it would have given fans great hope for the third season. But nope, we get radio-controlled Spock instead.
Man, Enterprise Incident would be a great leadoff because Kirk's acting out of character. I mean, you may think like Kirk went insane in between seasons or something, but no, you begin with this. Like
this would be like Manny Koto says that in season 5 of Enterprise, we were going to find out that T'Pol was actually half Romulan. Here we would come back into season 3 of TOS and we would think, oh, Kirk's actually Romulan.
And he's Tasha Yar's son.
Oh,
that would have been perfect.
Perfect twist.
And everyone would have said, who's Tasha Yar?
Oh, wow. Yeah, Sulu was very busy, wasn't she? She was everywhere like Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
In all the timelines.
Really, really was. Okay, Drew, why don't you just lead us off here into Spock's brain?
Well, Spock's brain, you've been waiting. You know, all of these poor fans have been writing letters all summer and sending peanuts to... Oh, wait, no, that was Jericho, wasn't it? Anyway, they were writing all these letters to NBC, you know, and they got renewed for a third season after season 2 ended with the pilot for a completely different television show that just happened to have Kirk and Spock in it. And here it's finally, we're back to the crew. We're back to the Enterprise. And it's the worst blue screen effect you've ever seen, followed by the crew staring at the screen silently. Like maybe you think that it's a silent film now. And subtitles come up. I don't know, maybe they were going to get artsy or something. But no, then they start talking. A woman appears and she knocks everybody out by pushing the same button. She can knock out the whole crew with the same sound effect that's always used in every episode of every 60s sci-fi show. Wow. She knocks out the whole crew and then they wake up and Spock is in sick bay because his brain is gone. Miraculously, he can stay alive for 24 hours without his brain, which is very strange. But that gives them a time limit. They have one human day to find Spock's brain. And so they spend, I don't know, 10 hours arguing about which planet it is. And then they get down to the planet and spend another 10 hours wandering around. And then eventually find Spock's brain and teaches them how to put his brain back in his head.
The end.
You know, you talk about them trying to figure out which planet to go to. There are some firsts in this episode for Star Trek, I think. Some things that inspired later Trek.
Conference room
think
scenes.
Think about Geordi's PowerPoint presentation.
Oh,
think
yes.
About Tuvok's
yes,
PowerPoint
thank you
presentation.
For bringing this up.
Chekhov is just totally giving the PowerPoint.
He's got one of Uhura's things in his ear. for some reason. Yeah, and he's standing there and he's pointing at the screen, and it's actually really good. They use the rear projection so that you can, they got to actually interact with the main view screen instead of just sitting in the conference room and interacting with a, you know, 4-inch screen sitting on a table. It was actually really cool, really neat visual wise, but they were talking about where to find Spock's brain, which they say 100 times in this episode. I must watch it again just to tally off the number of times that they mention the title of the episode.
Is there a drinking game associated
there
with this?
Be.
Every time they say Spock's brain, you just take a shot.
There has to be.
I mean, that's what I did.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's how I could get through it. Yeah.
Same here.
It's this episode is, if you ask people, what is the worst episode of Star Trek? They typically will say Spock's brain.
They're wrong.
But you know, this episode is so bad that it's good.
Yes.
I mean, this episode is a riot to watch. It is really fun to watch. It's yeah, not a good episode of Star Trek.
I think if you go into it like I did, knowing that it's commonly called the worst episode of all time, you're not disappointed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can go into it thinking, you know, this is going to be campy and it's stupid and just laugh
but
at
you,
it.
But you have you to know, feel bad for the original audience. I mean,
oh,
you've,
sure.
Yeah.
You've spent time of your life trying to keep the show on the air, and you're rewarded with Spock's, he's worse than dead. Come on, Bones, what's the mystery? His brain is gone. Like, that's not dialogue. But they're okay. Being so earnest about it.
Just as you're talking about that dialogue, this exchange in sickbay, this is when I burst out laughing. I'm sitting here watching this before the show. I've got my windows open. My neighbors are out on their balcony, and I know they're wondering, what on earth is he laughing at down there? And this is where McCoy says, Kirk says, then we'll take him with us. And McCoy says, take him? Take him where? And Kirk says, in search of his brain, doctor. From what you say, the moment we find it, we must restore it to his body or we lose him. And then McCoy, Jim, where are you going to look? In this whole galaxy, where are you going to look for Spock's brain? How are you going to find it? Kirk says, I'll find it.
It's the search for Spock's brain.
Brains are us.
That's what we need to do.
I'll find it.
We just need to have Chris read the entire script. And that's
we should,
the episode.
We should,
we're
huh?
done. Because it's just,
beautiful.
It's funny enough.
It's too bad Larry is not on with us today, because Larry is now playing McCoy in Star Trek Continues. We could have Larry read McCoy's lines.
Oh, that would
have
been
awesome. Missed opportunity.
He would have had to wear his pinky ring.
Man.
Yes.
We should
yes.
We should tell Larry that he needs to wear a pinky ring next episode.
I keep forgetting to ask Larry if he has the pinky ring, yeah. We got to do
it
that.
It better be there from
okay,
now
so
on.
Okay, so as we were talking about in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
This episode quickly turns into 24 in space, because the timer starts and the only thing missing is Galactic High Commissioner Ferris standing around reminding everyone how much time's left.
Yeah, seriously. We go from 24 hours to 8 hours to 4 hours. Oh, and then we're going to yeah. do the surgery. Okay.
But it's not like they spend the time doing exciting things. They're...
No.
Well, that's an
they're
M-class planet, and that's an M-class planet.
Yeah.
But that one's only in 1300s right America. I like how all of the technological... It's only Earth and only, like, America.
It's only America, yeah.
Yeah, that's all that's important, right?
Well, that's all
yeah.
that matters. America!
America!
America.
Oh man.
So sorry, Chris.
So where do we go from here? I mean, so it's 24, he's worse than dad. I mean, the whole idea of this woman just appears on the ship, which seems to be quite easy for especially for women to do, apparently. You think of,
well, I mean, this is
you
Kirk's
know,
ship.
Weak of an eye,
yeah.
This woman just shows up on
they've
the ship.
They've all got
as well.
That skeleton key.
You can almost see Kirk's expression when she's like scanning the crew and she just passes over Kirk. And he's just like,
Pick me. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. What?
Wait, what? No.
No, back over here.
I've got to go off. off track again, Drew, you just mentioned Kirk's expression, and you said a minute ago that you have to feel bad for the audience, the original audience watching this. You have to feel bad for the actors, too.
If you watch
their faces, how many times in this episode does Shatner, especially Shatner, look while someone else is talking, say Bones is talking, and the look on Shatner's face is like, can you believe that we're in this episode? Can you believe we're delivering these lines?
I've actually got this in my notes where just after McCoy says his brain is gone to Kirk, I think the reaction Shatner gives as Kirk is really just Shatner thinking, why the F am I doing this?
It's a paycheck, man. It's a paycheck.
That's it and that's all. Yeah.
But so I'm watching and we all thought, you know, we've been told over the years that because we think like brain surgeons are the super geniuses of society. But apparently you can remove a brain by just putting your hand on someone's head.
Yeah.
Now I think she was just like scanning it with her fingers.
Really?
I think so. I don't think that was the actual surgery because she took him down to sick bay. I mean, because she left him in sick bay.
That's true.
Well, we don't know if she took him to sick bay.
I don't know.
Maybe he walked himself there.
Oh,
afterwards.
That's true. Because he can function without his brain.
Remember what episode you're watching.
I always figured it was just like a really bad mind meld, and I said aloud, you are doing it wrong!
If you're going from the top, it's closer to the brain.
That's right. Your thumb is in the wrong place, woman.
No comment. No comment. Can't
oh,
go there.
God.
Here we go.
Oh, no.
Remember who we're on the show with today.
Let's
I'm
make
sorry.
Drew blush. Come on, Jenny.
Yeah. I haven't fallen off the screen yet, so... You haven't
It'll
pushed
happen.
Me too hard.
That's a challenge.
Oh, it's early yet.
And also, another thing that stuck out to me here was during this conversation about Spock, you know, he's worse than dead, Jim. His brain is missing. Bones explains to Kirk that Spock is still alive because there's something about the Vulcan physique that it allows him to stay alive even though his brain is missing. But then right after that, Bones explains that the Vulcan body is much more dependent on the brain in order to continue functioning than the human body is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he may not be able to put the brain back in and reconnect everything. Doesn't it completely contradict what he just said?
Yes.
If the body's so dependent upon the brain...
A little bit, yeah.
Why is the body keeping itself alive without the brain?
Yeah, shouldn't he be really dead?
Super dead.
Not just worse than dead, like really, really dead.
Not just mostly dead.
Yeah, completely dead.
He's super dead, Jim.
I had a hard time with this. Dead. Like, I
put my Katra into my boots, into my sole of my boots.
I had a hard time determining if Spock's situation was closer to, like, a futuristic version of the Terry Schiavo story, or Weekend at Bernie's.
Well, I was going to say Terry Schiavo, but until you said Weekend at Bernie's.
No, Weekend Bernie's is good.
Absolutely.
Weekend Bernie's is...
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
So it was...
I really like the part where they took Spock to the beach and they were making him dance.
It's more like Weekend at Bernie's 2 than the one where the music
the
makes him walk. Yeah.
That's what they should have done is made him go into that tundra and dig through the ice and find all the money.
Exactly.
I would have watched it. Just saying.
Wasn't Spock also in that short story, Flowers for Algernon? Didn't they race him through the maze against Algernon to see if to see
what? We didn't read that book.
Nope.
We're
watched
uncultured.
Weekend at Bernie's did not read the book.
Yes, we did not read Flowers for Algernon.
We're
we totally saw
here.
Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Yes. Yeah, not just one, but two as well. We're enlightened like that.
Remember, we've lived in America for a long time. All of our lives.
Yeah, not just all of our lives. Like, really worse than all of our lives.
So, So as I'm thinking about where to go with the conversation next in terms of the episode plot, I'm reminded of the fact that you guys are right. They really don't do anything for the first half of this episode except waste time.
No.
They waste that 24 hours because...
Oh, I know what this is.
Where else should we go?
It's Star Trek the Motion Picture minus the visuals, and instead they replace the special effects with PowerPoint. And it's all just talking.
That
what
works.
They needed was a 7-minute fly around of Spock's head.
Get up real close to his really pointed ears and then circle around the back of his head so you can see the lovely bowl shape.
Yes.
And then behind the other ear and then focus on the eyebrows as you go into his temple.
Only that would look really bad in HD now because the makeup just wasn't as good back then.
Yeah.
You could see where the glue is on the ears. But...
Wow. But so basically what happens is they figure out which planet they're going to go to, and they finally arrive and they beam down to the surface of Grizzly Adams 6, because this is where they all get attacked by Grizzly Adams clones.
Yes.
See, I thought they were like the Geico cavemen.
They were wearing moccasins or something. I had cavemen. I had the 12 disciples. Are they wearing Uggs? I try to avoid looking at Uggs, but I'm pretty sure that they were wearing them.
They were furry leg warmers.
They were, man.
Jenny, wasn't this the inspiration for Geico commercials?
Yes, it was. That's where they got the line, "It's so easy a caveman can do
it's
it.
It's so easy a morgue can do it."
And an eye morgue.
Take the brain out, you can put it back in. So easy a caveman can do it.
I like my favorite thing the cavemen do after getting stunned, the guy that, who's not stunned, just knocked over. Is just like, you are not Morg. You are not iMorg, but you are built like one. I'm like, is he saying Kirk is built like a girl?
Well, someone says, well, he does you are small, you're small like the others.
Yes, you're built like a girl.
I figured,
this reminds me of another first.
I think that was a penis joke.
Wait, I missed it.
What?
So Char, you think that Gene L. Coon wrote a penis joke into this episode?
Yes. Very, very well done, because it went straight above everybody's head.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 35 years and 45 years, and we're all like, what?
You guys, really? You didn't get... Wow.
I'm disappointed in myself.
As you should be.
I'm disappointed in you too, Jenny.
You should
so
be.
So am I.
I was too busy laughing at this episode.
That's true. That's true.
Laughing at Chekhov's expression when they, you're like, you don't know mates?
Yeah.
Like, you know, have sex? No, I don't understand.
You don't know the meaning of the word female? That just, like, that blew his mind.
I was expecting Chekhov to go, you mean there are no females on your planet?
Yeah.
With the little okay sign. From Mud's Women.
Yay.
But Drew, you remind me of another first here. I told you there were some firsts in this episode. This is a little known fact about this episode. You won't even find this on Memory Alpha.
What?
We already talked earlier about, you know, what if Apple had invented the bracelet that controls the pain belt? This is the inspiration for the naming scheme of all of Apple's products since 1998. It started with the iMac.
I caught this too, yeah.
You've got the iMorg here, and this episode was from 1968. Oh. In honor of the 30th anniversary of Spock's brain, Apple decided to rename the Mac the iMac.
Yep.
They changed the spelling a little bit. Instead of EY, it's I. It's easier for everybody. You know, it's kind of like Kronos with a K in the JJ movie. It's easier for the audience that way.
Yeah. Well, and to take it a step further even, you could say that Spock was the prototype Apple genius. I mean, he's just connected... to everything in this big store, right?
So are you saying that iMacs are the feminine versions of Macs?
Well, kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
They're a lot prettier than the Macs we had before that.
So that is also true.
So okay, I like this. Spock is the prototype for the Apple genius. So this is where... You know, Apple people now, we walk into the Apple store, we hold up our iPhone and we say, Spock, I know you're on this frequency. My Mac won't boot. What should I do?
Yeah. And he'll talk you through
it. And then over the PA system, he tells you, you should hold the command T while you start the...
Exactly. Apple, you ripped...
Select a new drive to boot from. Okay, so they get down to the planet, okay, and let's talk about the intergalactic... Oh, before we do, this morgue guy, what he says he's never heard of women before, obviously he's never heard of women before, or he wouldn't have a beard like that.
His beard is magnificent. It's magnificent.
Does that mean that all the cavemen are gay on this planet?
Maybe. They're all beards.
I was wondering how they reproduce.
No. That's the pleasure and pain. They come up, they stun them, and then they...
So they roofie them.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, is that this episode is actually has a deeper meaning. It's about date rape.
Oh. I need more vodka.
Yeah, I do too. It's only 10:44 a.m. here, but I'm going to go get my vodka too.
There's no coming back from this, guys. Holy wow.
All right. So we go down, we go under the surface, and let's talk about the intergalactic fashion show a little bit. We got to see Kara when she beamed onto the Enterprise Bridge with her go-go outfit on, but now we get to see all the go-go ladies, as well as these brilliant pain belts that the crew are wearing.
Hot.
They were sexy.
Almost as good as the collars on the Gamesters of Triskelion. Fashion statements.
Yes.
Just imagine going my down wife the runway called them, sporting that belt. Stick your belly out.
My wife called them belly button buttons. Because they've got a big button on the front and they're right there. I don't understand why they were placed there.
We talked on here, maybe it was the last time we did TOS, but we talked about how they did the episode. It's just anything they could find laying around in the wardrobe, anything they can find on the Paramount backlot. I'm pretty sure those belts were assembled with just whatever they found in the closet that day.
It looks like they just went over to craft services. Well, we've got a bowl, and I got this button, and we put the button here. And it kind of looks like a thing. We get some tin
foil.
What the
hell was it before? And what set?
Drew, you were complaining about the fact that nothing is labeled on the little wristband.
Yes.
But you don't need to label things because, as we learn later, you know, the belts have a giant red thing in the middle of them. Mm-hmm. And we find out later that the red button on the wristband is what unlocks the belts. So it is kind of labeled.
So they are labeled. They're color-coded because the Imar aren't very smart.
Yeah, even these dimwits recognize colors. Yes.
But McCoy's,
well, they are just women.
McCoy's remote control that can drive an entire humanoid body just has six buttons that are just different colors. There's no, like, joystick or directional arrows. There's
Riker
just
would be disappointed.
Push this button and he walks forward. And then Scotty holds it upside down. You'll notice.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You're holding it wrong,
and yet
Scotty.
He's still... So Scotty's not a good holder. Now we know.
Yes. It's like trying to teach your grandma how to use the remote for the television.
Why doesn't this button work?
What do all these buttons do? Or was Scotty so good that he knew that control button so well he could do it upside down?
No, well, here's how I justify it. Scotty built it, and McCoy was holding it upside down. Because I doubt that McCoy had the technical... I'm sure they worked together on it. And that maybe they argued about which direction the remote points. And so Scotty held it his way. This is my way.
It takes all
this
kinds.
This is a good point, Drew. Scotty built the remote control system so that Bones can drive Spock around. But he can't figure out how to work the magnetic lock on the pain belts. Scotty says, I think these things are on here to stay for a while. They seem to have some kind of magnetic lock on them. Like, Scotty, you're the chief engineer of a starship.
Yeah.
It's a magnetic lock. Figure it out.
You have one job.
We brought you on this mission for one reason. And that's to have your shirt tucked into your pants and a cummerbund. My wife kept asking, why is he wearing a cummerbund? And I'm like, it's not. It's one of those Velcro belts so that he could put his phaser on it. I mean, there's a point to it. Why doesn't everybody else wear them? They all have phasers. Because they don't want to look stupid. I don't know.
He thought he was going to a dinner party with the Eyemor. He was.
And Ice Fock.
Formal dress only. You must wear a cummerbund. Come on.
Red shirt's not invited.
This does tie into the... I was really nervous for those red shirts when they first beamed down. Luckily, they were only attacked with stones and sticks. They do that whole complex flanking maneuver to get all everyone into position.
Oh, I love that fight scene.
These guys jump over the rocks and just start throwing...
I'm going to throw things at you. Sticks at them. Woo! And then they stun one of them and the rest of them run away.
I like the lazy stun effect that just makes the entire area green and just one person falls over. There's no beam. Though they do the cool beam thing when that seems like an unnecessary effect for a scene that really doesn't do anything. When Chekhov's just like, well, we're going to be up here for a while, and he phasers a rock and makes it warm and then just...
And he shoots it not only once, but twice.
Notice that Sulu did not beam down to this planet because he was not about to get stuck on another ice planet.
Exactly.
Smart move, Sulu.
Like Enemy Within. And I'm sure that he had the shuttle started the entire time that he was in command. Like, you know, if transporters go out, we've got these shuttles, we'll be ready. We're not going to do another splitting of Kirk.
He probably had the shuttle leave the ship and just hang out nearby, outside the ship, to make sure, like, so that the docking bay doors don't get locked shut.
Because Sulu runs the ship a lot more efficiently than anybody else, and he's ready for every contingency.
Absolutely. He gets Sulu
is still having nightmares about that. Yeah.
He doesn't want to be Kobayashi Maru. He would
even have a pet dog now. Dogs remind him too much of what happened. He wouldn't even have a pet.
Yeah, that's true too. But at least he taught Chekhov a couple things, you know, like, well, if you're ever down on a planet, just phaser a rock and then you'll be warm.
Right.
I can do that? Yes. Just
I can do that. I can do that.
I can do that. I can do that. It's so warm here. Warm. It's so warm.
It's 40 degrees.
Even though he liked the weather because it reminded him of the motherland.
Exactly. 40 degrees in Russia feels great.
Well, glaciated planets were invented by Russians.
Chekhov does do a lot in this episode. He gives a PowerPoint presentation. He phasers a rock. He doesn't get any red shirts killed. I mean, this is probably the most that he does in the original series.
It's probably his best episode.
Yeah.
I mean, even the episodes that are focused on him are terrible. And he doesn't do much in them.
No, he's very competent here.
In the deadly years, he's the only person not affected because he screamed like a girl. I mean, here he gets to play hero and he's brave the whole time. I'm proud of him.
Good job, Chekhov.
Yay.
So they find out that the cure to the disease is to scream like a girl. So everyone on the ship screams like a girl in unison at the end.
Including the girls?
They have to scream like men.
This explains.
They what?
They have to scream like men.
Okay, yeah.
They have to roar.
Roar!
This explains why on TNG, Picard instructed Pulaski to scream like a girl, and then she got younger again.
Those early TNG episodes, like, I mean, they did open up the logs and be like, hey, this happened to the Enterprise a couple times, you know? They could have done that, like, aging. Okay, apparently you have to scream like a girl. Pavel Chekhov did this.
Just that easy. A child could do it.
Yeah, it's
babies do it all the time.
Now I'm trying to figure out who played the role of Data and who played the role of Yar in The Naked Time.
Ooh.
Since it was in the Naked Now is the same disease from The Naked Time.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
I'm sure that there were a lot of people we didn't see. Like maybe that guy that brought it up. Maybe he,
I'm guessing Yeoman Rand.
Oh God.
And? Yeah, who else?
Leslie.
Leslie. And it never happened.
Because Leslie, he's everywhere.
He is everywhere.
All right. Okay, so back into the corridor of the planet as we're talking about fashion. So let's get into the boots here.
Oh, geez.
Do you guys love when we first walk into the room and there are the three Imorgs in there and they're feeding the men by hand?
it felt like the guys had some major baby fetish or something.
I know. God, man.
Well, I think that was part of the pleasure part.
Oh.
And then the pain would come.
Dude, those cavemen have gross fetishes, man.
They really do. At least this wasn't the genesis of the Ferengi female chewing your food for you thing.
We don't need to see that.
No.
And there was no one sitting there stroking each other's ears.
Do we have to bring up Ferengi?
No beard stroking.
But did you guys like the explanation that the Imorg are giving of what happened in the corridor? The little pantomime finger rape?
Yes. Yes. I
and then
love that.
Over.
And she goes, oh!
We're awesome at charades.
Yeah,
really. Pictionary is really a big thing with the Imorg.
Well, I think that she was covering the parts that Kirk didn't cover in his captain's log that he was giving while he was passed out. So I think you would hear what Kirk is saying, and then you see through her what you missed in the last commercial break.
Gotcha.
Just in case you came into this episode late, heaven help you.
And you poor soul if that's you.
Oh, Star Trek's on tonight. Oh, man, they come in halfway through. What?
What is going on?
Why is Spock at that thing on his head? Why are they
at a strip club?
Yeah. Why isn't there music playing? What's going on?
I've never been to a strip club where the dancers feed you by hand. What's going on here?
You haven't been to the right places, man.
It's an alien world. They're into different things.
Oh, goodness. So Kirk starts his whole thing here with Kara about the controller. And Kara's like, no, you can't see the controller. It is not permitted. Never. Controller is alone, apart. We serve controller. I mean, what's with the speech here, too? It's like everyone speaks like cave. Well, I guess we've got the cavemen on the surface. The Imorg are maybe a little more refined, but they still all speak like cavemen pretty much. And then Kirk starts speaking like a caveman also.
They've all got to pretend they're stupid.
He's just trying to get into her pants.
I think it's part of the thing. You know, Kirk gives this big speech about you're not growing as a society, blah, 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 blah. You're having everything handed to you, blah, blah, blah. But it's true. The controller is controlling everything. And I think that they've not matured mentally or speech-wise.
Well, that's just it. Don't they mention something about brain atrophy or something? Hence, brain is brain. What is brain?
They haven't been... Yes.
What's brain, Precious? What's brain?
Lobster brain.
Why do you keep saying brain? Oh, I should say, why you keep saying brain? I have to speak like a caveman. Yeah, they do mention that. Yeah, because the brain hasn't been used for so long that they've just basically all become
stupid.
They do say brain atrophy.
You'd think the teacher, in expanding their brain, like it wouldn't wear off because she actually used her brain. She expanded it. You'd think she'd still be smart. I like the whole, I'm stupid. And then she goes into the teacher and she's just like, I'm the most evil person alive.
But remember, the effect is only temporary. So
let's only remember that we've talked already, wristband by Apple, Imorg inspiring Apple. This fancy, you know, salon hairdryer thing that they put on their head, the battery also was installed by Apple. So the charge only lasts about 4 hours.
Oh, man. Especially if you're playing Star Trek Rivals.
Well, then it's only like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then it all starts to wear off.
Right. So, you have to recharge, and in that space of time, that's it. You lose it.
They have ion propulsion technology for their spaceships, but they can't build a decent battery.
They're still using lithium ion. That's why.
Right. And don't confuse lithium ion batteries with ion propulsion.
Right. It's not the same.
It's different.
Not the same. Those ships they built that were powered by lithium ion propulsion, they only got a few thousand kilometers away from the planet and they just came to a dead stop.
Which is why the crew of the Enterprise was staring at it for so long and not doing anything.
They were impressed to get out this far.
Mm-hmm. That's why they wasted 10 hours before they got around to going down to the planet, because they just had to wait for their batteries to recharge first.
That's all this right. episode is,
they
isn't it?
They plugged it in.
Stupid yeah. freaking batteries.
While we're talking about the ship in the remastered version, the iMorg ship, I really like this new ship they put in the remastered, though, because in the original, it was just kind of like some generic stock footage rocket ship from 60s sci-fi.
Yeah.
But the dialogue talks about how advanced the technology is, and it's a very advanced design for the ship, and everyone's really impressed with it. So I like that in the remaster they designed this very unique looking spaceship for Kara to fly over, and
yeah,
I guess they used the old knowledge to invent that ship, of course.
Well, and you know this is a good episode when they're on red alert and totally fascinated by this little thing that's about the size of a shuttlecraft, and it's threatening
and it looks
you.
Like a fist.
There's one life form on board. It's gonna beam up here. We're gonna stare at it some more,
and we're gonna let it take.
Well, this is an episode of Space 24 that could be terrorists. You know, they're coming to bring the space atomic bomb.
Oh shit! Red alert.
Which it one of the crew happen. Is the mole?
Paranoia.
Which reminds me, in 24, the United States is on red alert all the time, right?
It yes. pretty much show. Is.
There is
yeah.
never a yellow alert situation, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we still have that terror alert or not, but when we did, if we do, I don't know if I don't look at it, obviously.
I think we still do.
It's just
different shades of red. It's red, yeah. magenta, scarlet,
it doesn't mean anything.
Ruby, crimson. Yeah, you figure out which one it is.
Blood red.
So Kara gets fed up with Kirk finally, and she hits a little button on her wrist to activate the pain belts. And then Kirk, Spock, and Bones, they go spinning and flipping around the floor, and they cut back to Kara's face, and she's kind of like, what? What are you doing?
Yeah, the
you
floor,
idiots.
You do the locomotion.
It doesn't hurt that much, does
Come
it?
On,
jeez.
It's not that bad.
Babies.
Maybe it's
come on, stand up.
Maybe
man.
It's calibrated to the morgues, who are bigger and can take the pain better. Maybe they didn't.
I guess.
Like,
maybe
you know,
so. Maybe that's it.
And
maybe
remember,
Kirk's
small,
double fist
like
up
others.
In the air, like.
And it's interesting. The iMorg developed pain belts, and of course they're belts, and they put the giant loop just, you know, like right above the waistline. There's something going on there for sure.
Definitely specialized targeting areas. Yes.
Pleasure and pain.
I expect Apple to release this very soon. The eye pain belt.
Well, you know, there are those rumors. There are those rumors about an iWatch coming this autumn. I think it's more like an eye belt coming.
Well, right. You can control the pain belt from the watch.
I hope that it's huge and has four unlabeled buttons.
Four buttons.
Boom. I need to make my phone make that sound when I push a button. Boom.
So then they wake up and all their equipment is just sitting on a table over in the corner.
They're not
out
very
the
smart.
Very
one,
nicely organized, no less.
One big guy to guard it. There's this one bouncer there. At the club.
Yeah, he just gets in the way.
To prevent them from getting their keys.
But he's very menacing looking.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to beat you up.
So they want to solve it with science. They want to solve their problem of not having their stuff with science.
Yeah.
And McCoy's like, yes, we will solve it with science. And then they all just beat the
Fist
crap
fight!
Of the person closest to them. Is that a commentary on science fiction of the 60s, maybe? That
well, every time I see that, I'm trying to make actually, it deep this episode, again. They do that,
stop
the fight
trying,
breaks out, and I yell, yes, TOS, obligatory barroom fight scene. Yes!
Yeah! Go, Kirk, go!
This is... I've told you guys, my wife will not watch the original series. You know, she loves DS9. She's seen all of DS9. She's seen all of Voyager, some of Enterprise, a lot of TNG, but just here and there. But I cannot get her to watch an original series episode. And one of the things she always cites is that there is an old Western barroom fight scene in every episode.
That's why it's great.
Yeah. If there exactly. wasn't an Andorian fight scene, it wouldn't be TOS.
I've been attacked by an Andorian.
That's right.
The Idorians are. You are not Dorian. You are not Idorian.
Now, we've mentioned the go-go boots a few times, but I have to ask the girls about these go-go boots because they have straps like oh, like God. Some kind of lingerie or something, but there's nothing. They're wearing skirts. Are these boots attached to their underwear? And would
they could be? It could be like a garter belt.
I think
right,
so,
but whole boots, not like stockings, but whole leather boots. It's impressive.
It's the future, man. It's the future.
Gravity has no
That's
meaning.
Where fashion
in the future.
Goes.
Okay.
Look, that's why Drew. They don't wear bras either.
Yeah. You don't have to. They're perky.
Gravity
all the time.
Has no effect.
Exactly.
Brian.
I knew that would get you to blush, Drew. I win.
Oh, is it hot in this room? Yes, yes it is.
I noticed a glimmer on you. Are you glowing?
Oh.
You glistening? Yes, you are.
Now, this is where Jessica walks in and says, "What's going on in here?"
What
nothing.
Get
nothing
off there right
as
now.
As I close the laptop.
You gotta go right now. Stop this.
Drew. No. Drew, why did you just tilt the camera down? Are you going to show us your
no,
pain
no,
belt?
No, I was
going to
close the laptop.
We don't need to see that. We know where it is, okay? And zip up your pants.
He's not wearing pants.
Oh, I didn't
Look,
catch that part.
Char, he's going
boxers?
He's gonna zip it up as soon as he finishes attaching his boots to his underwear.
Oh. One of these days, we need to have my wife on
oh, Drew,
so she can understand.
Boy, I like it.
I wish that my wife would come on so that she could understand the pleasure and pain of doing episodes with you two.
You love it. You know it.
Yes.
But, Drew, it may seem difficult to you to imagine how they would attach these entire leather go-go boots to their underwear. But remember, with the old knowledge... anything is possible. That's something we learned from this episode.
Ion propulsion, knowledge. Bootstrapping. Okay.
No gravity.
And the cranial screw top method, as we learn later.
Yes.
Don't try that at home. It's not in the Kama Sutra.
You know what we haven't discussed? Spock. His name is in the title.
Well,
we haven't even talked about Spock.
It's because all Spock does until the final few minutes of the episode is walk around as he's controlled.
Exactly. And he makes a ticking
but
clock sound.
He's Bones' little toy.
He does.
Yeah, he walks to the
It sounds really analog.
I do want to talk about Leonard Nimoy acting genius because, seriously, I'm really impressed with Leonard Nimoy in this episode. First of all, he has this walk like a robot thing down.
Definitely.
To a T. He does it really, really well, the way he turns, he moves his arms, the way he slowly walks. But to be able to sit in that chair and remain perfectly still while all this other ridiculousness is going on around him.
While Shatner's doing his pained, His pain fall toward the camera with that agony face on. Always falling toward the camera.
Yes.
I'm really impressed with Nimoy in this episode. Even though he doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. That's got to be incredibly difficult.
How can you not laugh through this whole thing?
I'm sure there are a lot of takes where he just says, Bill, you need to calm down.
So, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I just can't do it. Can you get Eddie Paskey to come stand in for me? I know he usually stands in for Kirk, but I think he can do Spock this time too. Could you guys just CGI me in here?
Yeah.
What do you mean there's no CGI? It's the
60s. Yeah, what's CGI?
Let's wait for the remaster. Yeah, in the original episode, it wasn't Spock. It was Eddie Paskey standing there. The remastered, they put little Nimoy in all those scenes.
I thought it was just a dummy. A dummy with a mop top.
You can see in the old version, the mustache.
They tried to digitally erase it. Or are you saying it's like the Joker in the 60s Batman where they just painted... Caesar refused to shave his mustache, so they just painted it white with the rest of the makeup.
Exactly. That's what they did. 60s makeup was awesome.
So they get out and they finally escape and they contact Spock. And this is where Spock, or maybe Sheldon, comes on and says, my medulla oblongata is hard at work, apparently breathing, apparently pumping blood, apparently maintaining a normal physiologic temperature.
Yeah, he's got awareness of autonomic body functions now, apparently.
Remotely. It's like Bluetooth or something.
Apparently this system is designed to interact with the humanoid brain.
Yeah.
And make it keep everything in line without thinking about it. Like, oh, I should turn on the air conditioner.
Right.
You know.
That's coming. It's Bluetooth 12.0 is one of the features.
That's what we need.
But they've really got to work on that battery technology because it's just gonna drain the batteries right down.
And then you just kind of stop walking.
Yeah.
Like, Spock, why wouldn't you come in? I'm sorry, Captain. I had to turn Bluetooth off. My battery is at 5%.
Damn, those lithium ions.
Push notifications are off.
The problem with those, with the new Bluetooth, is it makes the metronome sound wherever you go.
That's right. It actually reminds me of the backbeat of the Nine Inch Nails song Closer.
Well, maybe that's where they got it from.
Maybe.
Maybe it's a TOS reference.
Could be.
What
is Kirk's theme song?
I wanna.
Trent Reznor's is a big.
I love it.
TOS fan.
You know what? There is a great movie on YouTube that does. It's kind of like a Kirk and Spock slash thing, but it's done to Nine Inch Nails Closer. This makes a lot more sense now. We ought to put that in the show notes, Chris, and don't shake your head at me.
No.
I think you've sent me that link before, haven't you?
Hey, it's not like it's NSFW.
Are you sure?
Yeah, for real. I mean, it's got slash overtones, the song's but it's already not unsafe NSFW. For work. There's no nudity.
Thankfully. I'm sure there's some shirts off because Kirk's involved.
But I mean, come on. That's still PG in our culture. What's the problem?
Either
here?
Shirt off or at least ripped.
Yes.
Ripped.
Okay.
Moving on.
Sorry, totally giving you weird, often dead ends.
Well, what kid? This whole episode is full of weird dead ends.
That's
yes.
Exactly.
I did find it interesting that because Spock is involved in what's going on here and he's now running this planet, you know, Kirk goes into his whole thing about, you know, you can't kill one man. It just can't happen. That's never acceptable. And then Kara says, why do you not understand that the need of my people for their controller is greater than your need for your friend?
Wait.
And I thought, interestingly, this is in line with Vulcan thinking, right?
Yeah.
This is the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one.
And I would have expected...
I don't know if that was in there accidentally or not, though.
I would have expected Spock, and I did. I watched this episode waiting for Spock to argue, no, 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 let me be the controller. You know, these people need me more than you do. Because I was looking forward to the moment where I could say that Kirk talked a computer to life. Because usually he tries to logic them until they explode, but this time he'd be talking to Spock as a computer, trying to convince him to live. Even though he would be alive for 10,000 years, how does that work?
Right.
If you remove the brain from somebody and you put it in some kind of computer thing, it can last for 10,000 years. If you throw somebody into a Sarlacc pit, somehow they live 10,000 years. So, I mean, there's a lot of weird sci-fi elements that let you live an extraordinarily long time.
It's just the default 10,000 years. 10,000 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. You live 10,000 years.
Yeah, it's like your base pay.
Sure, why not?
In sci-fi. You get to live 10,000 years.
Your eternal life is 10,000 years.
Yeah.
I could never understand why Spock, though. Like, of all the people in the galaxy, they chose Spock. They just saw this passing ship and said, yeah, I'm sure there's a smart guy on there. Let's take his brain.
Would this episode have existed had it been, you know, Crewman Decker's brain?
No.
You know, random red shirt's brain. Some woman, Captain's log, some woman came on our ship and stole one of our crewman's brains. It's unfortunate.
Moving on.
She was hot.
Yeah.
She was hot. I'm disappointed I wasn't able to flirt with her. But I guess it wouldn't have worked because the Vulcans can live 24 hours without their brain. I mean, the episode would be different if somebody stole their brain and they died. I'm sure that happens every week. Like, you know, every other day.
We just don't know.
Ship
about
was attacked
that,
again. Three people right. died.
We don't hear about
their brains
episodes.
Were gone. I don't understand. Who cares?
We
need more people. That ship that follows us around and cleans up our prime directive breaks should send two more people ahead on a shuttlecraft so that we have our full complement.
Do you know about this ship, Jenny? This is something we found out about on the last Ready Room when we did a piece. A piece of the action where there's Starfleet has this ship that shadows the Enterprise all the time. So as soon as the Enterprise leaves a planet, this ship comes in and cleans up Kirk's prime directive mess.
Yes.
Gotcha. So they like maybe have the deneuralizer and they just wipe people's memories.
Like Men in Black. Yeah.
Take care of everything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
It saves from him having to call.
That explains a lot.
It saves from him having to call all the way back to Starfleet. You need to send somebody out. You know, I broke the prime directive. You need to send those society people in order to bring them back up. You know, they've got the ship. We didn't come up with a clever name, but we should. That just comes along behind.
Brain
the Wiki
brain.
Wiki
what
Will
brain?
Smith. USS Wiki Wiki Will Smith.
Getting jiggy with it.
That'd be a cool ship. After away missions, they come back on the ship and Kirk tells Uhura, Lieutenant, please transmit the standard mission report to Starfleet. She's like, got it. It's sent. And that's the standard report that just includes screwed up another society. Please send cleanup ship.
He's got a thing already filled out on his pad. It's just the, you know, choose what happened this week. You know, dear Starfleet, this week I talked a computer to death, broke the prime directive, you know, started a war, ended a war, and you just choose A, B, C, or D, and then it fills in the rest for you. I'm sorry.
E, destroyed an entire society.
I'm sorry that I did this for the betterment of my crew.
Sincerely.
It could be like a choose-your-own-adventure book where Starfleet Command, they receive it, they play through, they read through, they choose their paths. But the interesting thing about it is that every outcome likely happened.
Yes.
No matter what it is, it likely happened.
Mm-hmm. And then time travel would get involved, and then it's all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah, that's when you go back to the last decision that you made because you didn't like the ending, so you just time travel back to the last page.
Do it again.
Perfect.
Let me try going to
Edith
peace
Keeler died. Dang it.
No.
I must have done something wrong.
Back to page 47.
That's right. Let's do that over.
Let the Andorians stop the car. Okay, so we get to the control room the second time they meet Kara, and she zaps them again. And one of my things is with the HD, because I have Blu-rays now, and with the HD, I'm going to try to read Kirk's lips as he is falling to the floor from the pain belt, because he's mouthing a lot of stuff. If you look, Shatner is mouthing a whole lot of stuff as he's spinning around falling to the floor. And I think with high definition, I might finally be able to actually figure out what he's saying.
By all means, go for it.
I'm guessing it's ow, my balls.
I think you're right, Jenny.
Oh, jeez.
Hit me in the crotch again, I swear.
But thankfully, Spock takes control of the wristband. He unlocks the belts, which fly off of their bodies. So those things are on really tight. A lot of tension right there.
Well, you know, the girdles.
Yeah, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
And then they move into the actual action of this episode, really, because again, not much happens until the very end of the episode.
No.
Amazingly, we've managed to talk about it for 58 minutes, even though not many things happen. I don't know how we've done that.
Here's the actual meat of the episode. I wrote down at the end that Act 1, which planet is it? Act 2, women are funny. Act 3, extreme surgery.
Extreme surgery makeover. Oh,
Act 3 is extreme surgery, yeah. Well, before we get to that, though, I have a business idea. This episode has inspired me. If this whole Trek FM thing doesn't work out, I'm going to open up the Brainiac Beauty Salon. And my tagline is, set your perm, raise your IQ. Because you just lean back, you know, you just put that helmet on and you let your perm set. It usually takes about, what is it, like about 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Usually I think so. Setting your perm. And you get really smart. And you can do amazing things afterwards.
It doesn't just...
I will invest.
It doesn't just... What's that?
Perms aren't in.
They
You're
will
a
be.
Decades late.
They will be again when Chris opens up this shop.
Right, yeah. I'm going to bring perms back, Char. Don't shake your head at me.
I am, and I will. Sorry, perms are no-nos.
I gotta bring it back. And perms are just like the knowledge in this episode. They wear off. You need to come back.
Okay, you got a point not, there. I can't argue that. God damn it.
You're also not supposed to shower within the first day or so. Not supposed to get your hair, your brain wet in the first few hours, or it'll go away even faster.
Is that what happened in this episode, Drew? Did Bones take a shower before
he
tried to do
sweated.
The brain surgery?
He sweated way too much.
Oh, he sweated.
That's what it was.
Had beads of sweat everywhere. And
yeah, poor DeForest.
Pours out of him.
Poor DeForest. He's got his. He drives Spock for most of the episode, and then it's finally like his turn to shine, and they just make him sweat and raise one eyebrow so high that like it goes into his hairline. It's ridiculous.
Was that him raising the eyebrow, or was that Spock raising the eyebrow as Spock
kind
of took over
with the perm?
Everything?
Does it go from the eyebrow to the scalp? I'm confused.
Little eyebrow perms. Those are going to be popular too after I open the Brainiac Beauty Salon.
So you want a bunch of pube heads?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not hot.
That's exactly what the plan is.
I mean, I'm not the fashion.
When did you read
here,
my business
shit.
Plan?
No. The 80s are over. Stop.
So Drew, this is like when you have surgery on your eye and they tell you you can't cry for 2 days. This is like you can't sweat. No sweating on the forehead.
It's bad.
For 2 days.
And then all you do is cry.
Well, I like is that Vulcan brains are clearly labeled. You know, cuz McCoy's just like, I'm going to take this part of the brain and attach it. Like, how does he know that? I mean, is there a screen?
He has an IKEA manual for how to put together the Vulcan brain.
Exactly.
He does.
Connect
he does,
A yeah. slot to B tab. No. Yes. Yes.
Left finger.
Well, this leads us into the end of the episode, which is do-it-yourself brain surgery. And this whole thing is just... Okay, they've got the little, you know, the cardboard, the hole cut out in the cardboard, slides Spock's head in. I like when Spock tells Bones, if you can finish reconnecting my speech center, then I can help you along. But, you know, Spock, he was already speaking perfectly fine. Apparently, the completion of the whole reconnection, it just makes his voice deeper and richer.
Yeah, I thought that too. I'm like... He's talking just fine. That's what Spock's supposed to sound like.
Better resolution.
That's right.
Yeah.
He was VHS, and we thought that was well and good enough. We could hear him just fine, but then we got him in Blu-ray, and we were like, oh, Spock, we can hear him.
Right.
Or it's like these music download services like Spotify. It's the difference between being able to get the HQ 320 quality downloads for offline listening, or you can just stream, you know, the crappy low quality stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We want HQ Spock's voice, because Spock's otherwise we might misunderstand him. We might, you know, reconnect the wrong synaptic.
That's impressive too, that Spock knows enough about his own brain without the teacher that he can just like reconnect things.
Yeah.
Kind of makes you wonder if this has happened before.
Right? I mean, who knows which neuron is which? What the hell?
Well, you know, this has all happened before, and it'll all happen again.
My pinky finger. My wrist.
Spock's brain has been stolen over and over.
He's a hot commodity.
Finally, they break out of the cycle. They get back up to the ship, and they find out that they've been... Spock's brain has been stolen over and over for 17 days.
So, okay, this is not just they've been in a time loop. Groundhog Day? Oh, no.
Spock, you're so good at Jeopardy. How do you do this? So does anyone have anything to say about Spock performing his own brain surgery?
Impressive.
Yeah.
It's impressive it's impressive that McCoy got... McCoy did it in the right order enough that Spock would be good enough to help. You know, like, instead of just being like...
Yeah, like, he knew exactly where he was in the process.
Yeah.
Oh, now you need to do this.
Right.
Because I can see. I have a mirror that points at the top of my head.
Yeah, well, apparently, McCoy was down to the you know, fingers and wrists and moving parts, that he'd done all the hard parts. So, like, Spock really didn't really help. I think he just kind of helped confirm things so that Kirk didn't say, yeah, his left hand's moving. Yeah. I think his toes are moving. Let me take off his boots. You know?
I like that. Yeah, Bones is like right elbow, and then Spock's arm bounces. All right. Looks like that's working fine.
Jim.
But apparently inside the Vulcan brain, everything is labeled much more clearly than the Imorg belt control wristband.
Yes. That's why they don't show it to you. Or maybe it's color-coded. Maybe it's color-coded, like the controller.
It's like that furniture you get, and everything has like red on it and blue on it and green on it, so you know where to stick the parts.
Right. Maybe so. Maybe so.
So I was really impressed that as soon as the brain surgery is done, Spock sits up, everything's fine, and his hair is
perfect.
After he had brain surgery, his hair, he's got all of his hair on his head, and there are no seams, nothing's been shaved.
They're living in the future,
man. What did you say earlier? The screw top cranium?
The cranial screw top method, developed by Dr. Huffer, I believe his name was. It's perfect.
I like that Spock comes up and he's immediately, you know, explaining to the now completely dumb woman about how her society functions. And he keeps going. And one of the sad things about the remastered is that you miss the Kirk grabbing for the controller and trying to mute Spock. Because they have to fade the effects for the ship before the original effects faded in, because they couldn't go back to the original print. So you miss that, you know, just half a second of him grabbing it and poking the buttons. I watched it in the original effects just to get that scene back in. That one shot.
Good for you,
because it really helps with the whole let's all laugh at Spock ending that in about half the episode's end like this.
Right, yeah. Yeah, then the episode's over and we get the happy laugh ending, TOS laugh.
Yes, we've got to have that.
They needed more of that.
It's like a Scooby-Doo episode.
Let's make fun of Odo and laugh at the end of every Deep Space Nine episode. It would change the dynamic of the show a bit.
It would.
That'd be awesome, actually. Let's have a joke at Odo's expense. You change, Link. Go sit back in your bucket.
Oh, Odo, you are a flexible man.
Julian, well, at least I don't sleep in a bucket, and they all laugh. And it freeze frames on Odo going...
Fade to black. Done.
Oh, and then they play the theme song from Benson.
Now that's brilliant.
All right, well, we're at the end of the episode, and final thoughts. Jenny Zell, what are your final thoughts on Spock's brain?
It, you know, honestly, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting, because I was expecting just absolutely horrible, not even good to laugh at. So it was above my expectation. So, you know, it was a nice, you know, if you're in a Mystery Science Theater sort of mood, you can sit back and watch Spock's brain and just laugh. It's great. It's great. Oh, and I did hear that this show was the inspiration for the Pixie song, Where Is My Mind? Just thought you should, what? Should all know that.
Good to know.
I got to go listen to that right after we record.
Awesome.
Maybe that'll be our lead-in music.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I'm still waiting for 5-Year Mission to do their Spock's Brain, which is...
I hope it's just a cover of Where Is My Mind. Oh, I should tell Mike that.
You ought to message him on Twitter right now and suggest that.
Oh, man. All right. Char, how about you?
Well, like I said earlier, I wasn't sure if this was like a Terry Schiavo type of story or Weekend at Bernie's. Either way, as Jenny said, if you just sit back and enjoy this thing, you're going to laugh. You're going to enjoy it. It's absolutely mindless, ha-ha, entertainment. And you are going to enjoy it. It really is one of those episodes that's so bad, it's good. So, I'm going to give it 24 hours to live.
Best rating ever on the Ready Room. Drew, what do you have to say about this?
Well, I don't think it's the worst episode of Star Trek. Not even of the original series. I think that it does get a bad rap. But it's not painful.
Wait,
like,
Drew,
there are...
Which episode is the worst, then, in your opinion?
I am on the fence, but I think that, like, a lot of TNG Season 1 would rival my posting. Like, Chris and I talked about, Season 1s are hard.
Yeah,
and
what about TNG...
Of TOS, I would think that it would be like the alternative factor or something that's just impossible to follow and dull.
I don't know. There's something there. For me, it's probably And the Children Shall Lead or The Way to Eden.
Right. Like the Way to Eden, I think would... It's got weird music cues and the... you know, they get to Eden and it's poison. Like, it's trying to say something, but it just, it's awful at it. This show, this episode doesn't, I don't think it tries to say anything, and it succeeds at not saying anything.
Well, that's true. Mission then it's good. It succeeded. Mission accomplished. Hang the banner.
Good job, guys.
It's not extraordinarily sexist. I mean, the women are stupid, but so are the men. It's just the whole society is stunted. Sure, it's another, let's break the Prime Directive and destroy your society, but I mean, it's not completely awful. Yeah. And it does, it never forgets the title of the episode.
No one ever.
And they never let you forget it.
They never let you forget it.
And they never
I wish that more episodes did that.
You've got left.
And the children shall lead. And the children shall lead. And the children shall lead.
Right. Where are we going? Well, I'm not sure, but the children shall lead us.
That's right. Children.
Where no man has gone before, obviously.
You know, Drew, we didn't talk about if it's an episode that's portraying women as stupid, and I have heard people talk about that, and I've heard some women who get kind of upset about the episode, but it's not really a case of them trying to portray women as being stupid. They're portraying everyone as being stupid in this episode.
Yes. You know,
everybody's stupid.
The women are stupid. The men are stupid. It's just the entire society has forgotten how to use their brains. And if anything, the women are more intelligent than the men in this episode.
They at least know how to use their remote
Right,
pads.
They're in control. Yeah.
Right. So I don't think that that's the message. I don't think that was ever intended to be the message. I don't think that's the message. So if anyone's watching it and getting up in arms about that,
no,
just take it for
they're
what
trying
it is.
To be offended, probably.
It's radio-controlled Spock.
So, yes.
I spot.
You can't take it too seriously.
That's right. So what's your rating, Drew?
I'm going to give it 6 unlabeled buttons.
Okay, so for me, I was glad to do this episode because I've actually had a lot of conversations recently where people, they bring up Spock's brain. They're like, oh yeah, you want to see bad Star Trek? Go watch Spock's brain. And I always tell them, you know, Spock's brain, it's ridiculous, but it's not the worst episode of Star Trek. And this episode is so bad that it's good. And look, if you're ever feeling down, you know, if your boss is ever riding you at work and you're depressed, if you're ever having problems at home and, you know, you're depressed, and if life's just generally got you down, watch Spock's brain, because you're going to laugh your ass off. It's going to be the most fun that you ever have watching Star Trek. It's a great episode.
Yeah.
It's really a great episode. It's like the perfect storm of everything that's great about Star Trek. You've got all the cheesiness of TOS. You've got the campiness. You've got the urgency. You've got the 24-hour clock ticking.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Shatner overacting in ways that he rarely does.
Oh, big time.
It's got Bones' best line. He's worse than dead. And it's just a great episode. It makes me wish that TNG had used this like they did with The Naked Time to do The Naked Now. They could have used this, and they could have done Riker's brain.
Wait, wasn't that Shades of Grey?
Oh.
Yeah.
Only done worse. So bad it's bad.
Just imagine radio-controlled Riker, planet full of women wearing go-go boots.
Hell yeah.
Imagine where they could have gone.
The buttons would be labeled, and one of them would be leg up. Or maybe
right
you
button.
Wouldn't even have to have a button for it. Maybe it would just be his default posture. When you push stop, yeah. His leg would go up. Even if there was nothing there, he would just have his leg up.
The button would be labeled leg down.
Yeah. Only you'd never use it.
And of course, if it were a TNG episode, one of the buttons would be labeled barrel roll.
Hell yeah!
Of course.
Geordi would be jabbing that one all the time. Yeah. Because as the engineer, Geordi would have designed the system in the first place. All right. Although if it were season one and it were Chief Engineer Argyle, one of the buttons might have been labeled distill.
Yeah.
That's how he activates.
No, make friend. And he'd push the button and have a friend.
Shot.
No, that's Barclay.
Oh, that too. But it would be a holographic pad and he wouldn't be able to leave with it.
All right. I don't know. I'm going to give this episode 10 pain bands.
Nice.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Don't try to take it seriously. If you take it seriously, you'll be disappointed.
It's episodes like that that people say, oh, I don't like Star Trek. And I'm like, how can you not? There's so many, like each series has its own way of telling a story. And each season and each episode, like if you like corny campy stuff, there's episodes for you. If you like deep, dark, serious stuff, there's episodes for you of each series. And people who say that they don't like Star Trek, I just don't understand. They obviously have watched the wrong episodes for them.
Or they just suck.
It's entirely possible.
And there's no hope for them, and you just gotta let that go, dude.
I don't know.
Look, there's therapy.
For me?
Yes, for you. Oh, it worked for me. Okay, good.
Yay, I could be like Char.
I'll refer you. I get $10 off my next appointment if you refer.
Do you have an offer code, Char?
I do.
What's the code? Char7?
Yeah, it's called Pain Brain. Please use it.
Pain Brain 7, right, for July.
Yeah,
for
July. Yeah, Pain Brain 7. Squarespace is going to
kill
us.
I have one last question for you guys. In the credits, James Darris, who also co-starred with Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner in Mission Impossible, is credited as Creature.
That's my favorite.
Who can tell me who Creature is in this episode?
He's a little house elf from Harry Potter.
No, his name would be Dobby. Then.
No. The creature was another one. Creature was one in the later movies. No.
Now, who is Creature in this episode? James Darris as the creature.
The creature.
I'm guessing it was the guy guarding the communicators.
I
know.
That's my guess.
It was not him.
I figured it was the first guy who threw the rocks in the fight scene. Rah!
We'll get you! Creature is the morgue who gets stunned and then talks about women with Kirk.
Okay.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
His name is Creature?
Why couldn't they give him a name? I mean, this is the difference between Star Trek and Star Wars. If this had been Star Wars, he would have had a name so they could make an action figure out of
yes.
him.
Yes.
Mama Blue!
Yeah.
If they didn't give him a name, then the action figure people would make one up.
Hello, franchising right. opportunity.
Maybe that was it. Maybe that was it. Like, you know, this guy, oh, I can't reach him, is Walrus Man. You know, and then there's Hammerhead. As to actually pick up a figure and show it. See, this is Hammerhead. But then, of course, they gave him a name later. So it depends on if it's the toy makers or the novel writers.
Drew, why is your Hammerhead action figure wearing Starfleet blue undies from Enterprise?
I all of my Star Wars figures are dressed in Starfleet blue undies.
Standard issue.
I made little ones for all of them.
It's standard issue across all universes.
When I was a kid, we used to take Hot Wheels cars before they put the little rubber wheels on them. They just started making the little rubber wheels, and most of the cars still had the hard plastic ones. We used to buy the cars with the rubber wheels, and then we would take other cars and drill the rivets out, and we would paint the car, do custom paint jobs, and we would put the rubber wheels on them, and we would glue them back together, and we had these special cars.
Please,
that no one else had.
Hit my
apparently,
hot
Drew.
Wheels.
That's right. Pimp my Hot Wheels. Exactly. MTV stole that from me.
I'm sure they did.
Apparently, Drew takes his Star Wars action figures apart, paints Starfleet blue undies on the wall and then puts them back together.
I actually did that before Enterprise came out too. So they actually stole their ideas from me.
So they stole that from you.
Oh, see?
You should have asked Brandon Braga about that. Stealing my Starfleet blue undies.
All right, guys. Well, somehow we have managed to talk for more than an hour and 20 minutes about an episode where almost nothing happens. So
go us!
Let's let everyone go.
Yeah.
Before we do that, Jenny, tell everyone where they can find you around the internet.
Mostly these days you can find me at mouthybroadcast.com, where we do a weekly podcast where it's just a lot of shit talking. Charlene's been on the show. Love to have you back again.
Yes, oh, please have me back. I love you.
Yes, yes, it was great. Fun. So if you like us on the show, you'll love Mouthy Broadcast. And then also right now I'm in the running for Miss Nerd America.
I voted for you.
And it's just missnerdamerica.com. Thank you very much. And if you look under contestants, you could find my picture.
You're hot.
I'm there.
Yeah. Everyone go vote for Jenny Z. Miss Nerd America.
And go check out the glamour shots.
Yeah.
They're pretty good.
Awesome. All right. And anywhere else? Twitter? Anywhere else?
I'm on Twitter at Jenny_Z. I'm on Facebook, but I probably won't add you on Facebook because I'm a snob like that.
You bitch.
Vine, Instagram, all that. Yeah, I'm totally a bitch.
I only say that because you did add me, so there. Ha ha! Elitist!
Well, you're special.
Yeah, I saw you comment on something. I was like, I should be friends with... Oh, I am friends with her. That's how often she uses Facebook. Oh, I already am. Oh, yeah.
So, Landry, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at 005, and they can find me on several guest spots on several other episodes on Trek FM. I was just on that. I'm really proud of the conversation that we had on the orb. So even if you're not a fan of Deep Space Nine, I think we talked about some really cool season ones of Star Trek.
That's
episode 22 of the orb, I think. And
that's right.
People should check that out.
We had fun. It's kind of like it's DS9 from a newbie's perspective because Drew is watching DS9 for the first time. So we had you on the orb to talk about your take on DS9. And of course, we focused on the first season, which is not really very DS9-ish, but we found out that you had to apologize to your wife for Move Along Home, right?
Yes. Multiple times. I'm sorry. They didn't warn me. It just happened.
Well, we didn't want to take the fun out of it. If we warned you, it wouldn't be fun. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, it has.
It's been something.
Pleasure and pain. <Yeah.
laughs> Chris, I cannot tell you how much fun that was doing Spock's brain, making Drew blush, me and Jenny. And having a wonderful, sort of deep at times conversation about Spock's brain. I think we tried. It's just...
Okay. If that's what you want to believe, if that's what you want to believe, Char, that's what you take away from that, then that's good.
That's
for
what
you.
I choose to believe, man. I'd like to think that we tried.
It was interesting for sure. We tried. Well, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they want to let us know if we succeeded in being deep. Or not. I know the answer is not. But if you'd like to share any other thoughts you have about Spock's brain or anything else we talked about in news today, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that'll come to us by email. You can also join in the forums if you'd like to chat with us, the Trek FM crew, other fans, and other listeners. You can do that at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the original series, as well as one for the Ready Room. I don't think there's a dedicated section for Spock's brain, but, you know, we might
give it time. Well, I'm sure people can make it happen.
Give it time. If you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can easily do that from any page on the website now. Just look along the right-hand side of any page, and you'll see a tab that says Send Voicemail. Click that. A box will pop up. You can record a voicemail with your webcam's camera and upload it to us as an MP3 file right from the page. If you're on Facebook, you'll find us at facebook.com/trekfm. And of course, you'll always find us tweeting about Star Trek on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Char, what if people would like to find you personally?
Well, of course, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Oh the Profanity, where I do occasionally spew profanity. And you can also find me all over the Trek FM network, of course, because I'm the managing editor. So I manage things and I write things and I edit things. But you can also catch me on To the Journey.
To the Journey.
Sorry, I put you in that spot. It's weird when it's only one other person. I'm sorry. But you can find me and Lori and Tristan talking all things Star Trek Voyager on that show every week. And we have a blast making it. And then how about you, Chris? Where can we find you?
Well, you can find me all over the place on the network. You can find me every week with Matthew Rushing on two shows, The Orb, where we talk Deep Space Nine, and Literary Treks, where we talk Star Trek books and comics. You'll find me on my interview show, Matterstream, which is just an occasional show where I talk with creatives and actors and scientists about things that are inspired by Star Trek. And these days, you can also find me every week on our new show, Warp 5, which I co-host with Kate Walsh. And on that show, as you might guess, we talk only about Star Trek Enterprise. And Char, Warp 5, we had Dave Rossi on the first episode. We had Brandon Braga on the second episode. And as a result, Warp 5 is currently ranked number 5 in the top podcasts for TV and film in the US iTunes store. It's
nice.
Up there. In fact, everything around it are movie trailer feeds, like Les Miserables, the new Die Hard movie, all this stuff. So it's right up there at the top, and it's really exciting. And the numbers are just exploding daily for that
show. That's amazing.
So
way to go.
It's been big. So big thank you to Dave and Brandon for coming on with us. And if you haven't listened to those shows, go check it out. Just search Warp 5 in iTunes or go to trek.fm/w5. And you'll find the show page there and you can subscribe.
Absolutely. It's a great show.
If you'd like to find me on Twitter, my username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that username. And you can also find me on my personal website, which is cbrianjones.com, if you want to check anything out there as well. Also, Char, before we let everyone go, we would like to ask everyone to please support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important to helping us keep this programming coming to you every week. First, we have Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a personal website, blog, portfolio, and online store. You can really do anything you want with Squarespace, and it's really, really easy. So go try them for free. It's a 14-day free trial with no credit card required. Just go put in your name, your email address. You'll get your free trial site. And then when you decide to sign up, use our offer code TREK7 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase. You're gonna love Squarespace. Please take my word for it. Take Char's word for it. We've both been using Squarespace for a long time. And your support of Squarespace helps us bring the Ready Room to you every week. And also, because you're all big Star Trek fans, if you're listening to this show, you really need to go visit TrekFan.org. TrekFan is an amazing chance for you to come together with other fans to do more than just talk about Star Trek. Now, of course, Char, I like to talk about Star Trek. You like to talk about Star Trek, right?
Yeah, of course.
But if we just sit here, you know, behind our microphones all the time and talk about Star Trek, we're never going to build a warp drive. We're never going to build a starship, you know. If we really want to get to that Star Trek future, we need to be doing more. We need to be hands-on building that future. And that's what you can do together with other fans at TrekFan.org. It's all about collaborating and solving puzzles and completing real-life mission objectives. So turn your love for Star Trek into something that can help us move toward that future now. Go to TrekFan.org, support TrekFan, and solve that first puzzle. Take your first step on your next adventure. And lastly, if you would personally like to support the network and our programming, please visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 new alien-themed badges as a thank you for your contributions that are perfect for your shirt, for your bag, for your dress uniform, or in the case of Spock's brain, perfect for your go-go dress. They're 44mm badges. They have original illustration by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And those are at trek.fm/donate. And your donations help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring this programming to you every week. And we've had quite a few listeners donate already, and we really appreciate their support. We want to say thank you to Mike, Kevin, Philip, Kate, Raduz, and Lisa for your support so far. It really means a lot to us that you take time out to contribute to what we're doing and help us keep this coming every week. And we hope other listeners will do the same. So go check those out. Beautiful buttons. There are also art prints that you can get, and helps us keep Ready Room coming to you.
Absolutely. And thank you to those of you who donated, and thank you in advance to those of you who will.
Absolutely. Well, Char, it's time to let everyone go. I'm going to wander off and check out Chekhov's PowerPoint presentation. You know, it's lunchtime here. I'm hoping he can help me figure out which restaurant I should go to today.
That sounds really good, Chris. So I think it's time to stick a pain belt on it, because this Ready Room is done.